show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here, this is a live program for those of you who might maintain some level of doubt. This is the 25th day of July, 2011. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn, conversation radio unlike anything else in the country of which we are aware. And it would be improper if I didn't note that it's also Moran Monday. And Morans we have. But it seems improper to run the Moran Monday music when the lead story, at least to my mind, is another right-wing killer who's been out and about and doing what right-wingers do, to wit, killing. Oy. You know, details were sketchy. As they rolled in on Friday about what had happened in Norway. Well, they're not sketchy anymore. In fact, there is a wealth of detail about the man who made all of that hell and misery unleash in that otherwise peaceable country. In some ways, more detail than perhaps we're comfortable having. We have two primary correspondents in that corner of the world. One of them is our buddy Scott, who is in Sweden. The other one is our buddy Michael, who is actually in Norway. And so I'm going to begin with Michael's note. And I hope that we will have, this evening, somebody has to have a serious conversation about this in the United States, because so far it has been an epic fail on the part of the for-profit media, which is part and parcel of this email from Michael. He notes off the bat that he's been sort of in and out of contact because he just got new digs. He said, I'm just listening to the show now, hearing you talk about the level of journalism from the American press. You'll recall the Reuters story that we featured at the beginning of the show on Friday, which noted deep into the reportage that the shooter was thought to be a tall, blonde, blue-eyed white man. And yet, a few lines down, more references to Islamic terrorism. Wholly incongruous, at the very least. I'm just listening to the show now, says Michael, hearing you talk about the level of journalism from the American press, which makes it even more frustrating that I must listen to the show and delay until my new line is installed. Frustrating because I was pondering this very same issue, wishing I could write you an email last night after learning about the New York Times apparently jumping all over some Islamic group claiming responsibility, basically making themselves look complete fools compared to the Norwegian press. The for-profit media in this country, this is an editorial note, this isn't Michael, the for-profit media in this country do not have to work very hard to make themselves look utter fools. because they are merely manifesting the appearance of what they are. Michael continues, at the time New York Times broke this non-story, there had already been several Islamic and other fringe groups claiming responsibility. Hence, merely some modicum of research could discredit this group's claim right off the bat. I was literally listening to Norwegian radio hosts and reporters discussing between themselves what the heck was up with this strange move from this presumably respectable news outlet. There was no new information suggesting there was any more hold in this claim than there in any other ones. It simply seemed plain dumb, particularly considering that Norwegian journalists at the very time of this release were in the process of obtaining official confirmation that this 32-year-old had ties to nationalist anti-immigrant groups. You know, doing journalism! Fair enough that nothing in that regard yet had been confirmed at the time, but all indicators were already pointing away from Muslim extremism. Looking through various world media today, and this is a couple of days ago, catching up on articles written yesterday till today, I'm amazed at this apparent eagerness, and I think that is the appropriate word, said editorial Bob. I'm amazed at this apparent eagerness many publications seem to have in planting this story in the... One of these days we'll have a professional broadcaster behind this microphone. You know, one who can say all kinds of words all at the same, one right after the other. Well, we've got all the right words, Reg. Now all we've got to do is get them in the right order, right? Try this again. I'm amazed, says Michael, at this apparent eagerness many publications seem to have planting this story in the Islamic extremism column, regardless of the lack of anything credible suggesting this might be the case. Some maintaining this narrative even now, when all doubt has been erased that this had nothing to do with Muslim religious terror. American media in particular seemed to have displayed an almost wishful assumption from very early on, and way longer than defensible, which to me appears anything but professional. Have the rating jocks gotten so bad that they willingly sacrifice any pretense of credibility just to raise a few more eyebrows? Yes! Relying on the for-profit media for something approaching accuracy or integrity in this country is a mistake at this stage that only fools make. Anyhow, says Michael, as so typical with commercial media, other tabloids around Europe seem to receive their cues from American media strategies. The British newspaper The Mirror, for instance, published an article on their website pondering why Norway has become a target for Muslim terrorism. Released several hours after Norwegian police already had confirmed that the perpetrator was 100% Norwegian and non-Muslim. In fact, anti-Muslim. This article, which now no doubt has lost all relevance, if it ever had any, is still proudly featured on their front page at the time of me writing this. What the... Yeah. Michael then gives us a rundown of what actually had happened. He says, yeah, I know, this could not go on in print in any newspapers. I'm making assumptions about his motives that are not confirmed. But judging from what he has written online and his affiliations, I bet I'm not far off. Okay, the library's closing in 6 minutes. Got to get going. Sorry I didn't get to proofread this thoroughly. Michael works pretty well on the fly, doesn't it? And of course, what Michael is getting at is the fact that this guy was and if no one else will say it, by God, we here at the Horn will. And I know others will say it. Malloy won't shrink from the truth. Rick Smith won't shrink from the truth. How I wish Guy James was around to discuss this story. The man was a... Come on, say it with me. The man was a Christian of the finest order. Utterly what, washed in the blood of conviction that he was doing the right thing by murdering children. You want to know how I know? That this man was as motivated by his Christianity as anything else? Let me play for you the words, and I've got audio problems this evening, and I don't know what they are, and I apologize for them. We'll get them sorted out at some point in time. Let me play you the words of another convicted, not as in legally, but, you know, deep convictions, closely held. Let me play you the words of another Christian responding to these attacks. And yes, it's supper time. Deal with it. Sorry. Now, here's another Christian.
So, Saturday, I was following the news of the shooting in Norway and the explosion in Norway, which happened, what, on Friday?
Yeah, the explosion was, and then we left the air, and
right.
And then he went to, you know, the camp.
Yeah, well, when we heard the explosion, everybody was willing to say, it's Muslim extremists! It's Muslim extremists! I don't think we made a comment on it because we didn't know, other than there was a bombing that happened. And as the thing started to unfold, and then there was a shooting at a political camp, which sounds a little like, you know, the Hitler Youth or whatever. I mean, who does a camp for kids that's all about politics?
Yeah, that is uber-Christian Glenn Beck. Comparing the murder victims to members of the Hitler Youth. Really? Really? Let no one say we took him out of context. Here's the rest.
Disturbing. But anyway, so there's this political camp, and some crazy man goes and starts shooting kids. I get up Saturday morning and I write to Scott Baker at The Blaze and I said, I haven't seen this yet anywhere and I can tell you exactly what's going on. Somebody just needs to follow the story. And what is going on is exactly what I said would happen. I warned that this would happen last fall. Can we find and see if we can find the audio of me saying it? It's actually a kind of a famous monologue because I made it's a very complex theory, and you make one error in it, and it sounds like you are blaming it or agreeing with or whatever. And it's the monologue where I spoke about Geert Wilders. I think I only spoke about Geert Wilders on Fox one time. I think I had Geert Wilders on CNN headline news show, right?
Yeah, I feel like a couple times you had him on that show. Yeah,
Geert Wilders, and I think I've had him on this program before. Geert Wilders is the politician out of
Denmark,
I think. He's a guy who is very outspoken on Islam, and he's warning Europe, we're in trouble. We are in deep, deep trouble. And they've tried to make him into a terrorist and a hate monger and everything else. But when he came out with this...
Blah, 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 blah. It's still the Muslims' fault. Because they've got all these right-wingers so up in arms. Who holds a political camp for children? Thanks to Texas Betsy for this link. This from Lawrence O'Donnell's Last Word blog by Daniel Weisberg. Summer's finally coming. If you're a kid, that means fun in the sun, cookouts, and using hard candies to buy summertime sweets. What? Using hard candy as currency to symbolize the gold standard wasn't part of your summer experience growing up? Then you weren't one of the lucky few to go to Tampa Liberty Tea Party Camp. Thanks to the Tampa 912 Project, an organization under the Tea Party sphere. Gee, who started the 912 Project? Glenn Beck, yeah. Your children can experience a week-long seminar on our nation's guiding principles, Perrin, as fantasized and psychoticized by followers of Ayn Rand, anarcho, you know, Rand, right, sickening bastards. Children ages 8 to 12 will be introduced to core principles such as America is good, and the more important value, I work hard for what I have and I will share it with who I want to. Randianism. Government cannot force me to be charitable. Examples of this kind of thinking coming today close to home. Down in a much beset community in southern West Virginia, in the heart of the terrorism sacrifice zone of coal country, a place called Mann, West Virginia, M-A-N, just like it sounds, there was a story today about the fact that they're installing a massive solar panel array, massive for a little town like Mann, at the cost of some $80,000, provided via the stimulus funds. And the city manager, town manager, mayor, whatever he is, says, you know, we need all the energy we can get. We got coal around here, we'll take coal. We're going to use oil, we're going to use gas, and we're going to use solar, because that's available too. Well, I'm not even going to send you to the website. Just suffice to say that the 9 comments I saw on the story earlier today were largely, although there were a couple who pushed back, were largely from people saying, see, that's that evil government redistributing wealth just like communists do. I work hard for what I have, and I will share it with who I want to. Government cannot force me to be charitable. That's straight out of Ayn Rand. The article noting, clearly, community service is not part of this itinerary. So what are some of the activities your children can look forward to at Tea Party Camp? Children will win hard-wrapped candies to use as currency for a store symbolizing the gold standard. On the second day, the banker will issue paper money instead. Over time, students will realize their paper money buys less and less while the candies retain their value. Some of the kids will fall for it, an organizer said. Other kids will wise up. So the kids who fall for it will then be preyed upon by the kids who wised up. I'm just saying. So, yeah, I wonder if Glenn Beck would refer to that as sorta like Hitler Youth. Probably not, since it was organized by one of his little 9-12 projects. I don't like the audio quality I'm getting, and I'm sorry, I'm trying to engineer on the fly. I don't know what the hell's going on here. Oh, well. We'll get it sorted out. But That was a Christian. Granted, he was a Christian who believes that when he dies, he gets to be a god on his own planet and will populate the planet by himself with his wife. Ding, 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 ding. They never really think these things through, do they? But try finding anywhere in the for-profit media of the United States where they note with any significance, or note as being significant, this man's Christianity. Just like Timothy McVeigh was a Christian. Just like, you know, David Koresh was a follower of Christ. It's not there. As David in Tennessee noted, it turns out that this guy was actually a blogger over at Pam Geller's site. He lifted, I watched his video, YouTube video over the weekend, and it was just this sickening, horrifying manifesto of bigotry, racism, and, well, you know, 21st century Nazism. Fox News, Radio Rwanda, couldn't even quite bring themselves to admit that this guy was a terrorist.
king, meaning he wants the Europe that existed in the 19th century. He criticizes everybody. He criticizes the Nazis, the Marxists, the capitalist, the right wing, the left wing. He wants to build an ideology on his own.
Yeah, and look at right. Are you surprised somewhat that Western newspapers, in this case the New York Times, seem to be jumping on the fact or trying to equate Christian, what they say, or Christian extremists with Muslim extremists? The headline today, for example, "Killings in Norway spotlight anti-Muslim thought in U.S." What does one thing have to do with another, except for the fact that he claims to have studied, among other people, the Unabomber and plagiarized some of his rantings in his own manifesto?
Thanks to Media Matters for that. Oh, yeah. Let's see. That was Brian Kilmeade. Pamela Geller, who is just a loathsome human being, if human being is even an applicable term. If anyone incited him to violence, it was Islamic supremacists. Yeah. And then there is John Hinderaker. I always thought that was the foreign title for that abominable movie with Roger Moore, Moonraker. Hindraker, Moon, get it? I made it funny. It was not at all wrong to blame Muslim terrorists. The perpetrators of these attacks have not yet been identified, but they likely were Muslim terrorists. At Big Peace, they referred to Anders Behring Breivik as a jihadist, not as a terrorist. Erik Erikson said, I bet it wasn't Lutherans who did this. This is extremely common among Muslims. Jeebus. So that brings us... That brings us to the correspondence from our good friend Scott in Sweden. I'm trying to wrap my head around what happened in Oslo. It seems pretty apparent by now that the perpetrator seems to have been inspired by Tim McVeigh or his source material, the Turner Diaries. He was also a convert to Christian fundamentalism after high school. He was a regular visitor of white power bulletin boards, the local equivalent of Freepers. I do not even want to know this perpetrator's name like I do McVeigh's, but of course we all do by now. I want his name to die in the security, because deep in the hate fringe on the right, murderers are admired and immortalized if the murder is done for cause. By the way, the maximum sentence this creep faces is 21 years. 21 years. No, really. He could be kept longer if he's deemed still to be a danger to society. 21 years. It was interesting, says Scott, to watch Norwegian news coverage in contrast to what little I saw of 9/11 or Oklahoma City from here. I turned on Swedish TV Friday, and the usual terror experts were standing at the interview table with the Swedish news guy, and it was clear that nobody knew what was going on, and unlike too many American pundits, the Swedish experts kept saying, "Do not ask me to speculate," or "I do not know," or "We have not seen anything concrete," and so forth. When the news guy still kept prodding and suggesting which Islamic groups might have been, because they did it too, might have been the culprit, they pretty much told the news guy to stop speculating and just wait for the police in Norway to do their work. Says Scott, this is so not CNN or even Al Jazeera. Yesterday, Saturday, the Swedes realized that the only people who knew anything were the Norwegians themselves, so rather than report third hand, they just surrendered Swedish broadcasting frequencies to the Norwegians, and we watched Norwegian coverage. We miss a few words every now and then, but it is understandable. The Norwegians, very much like the Swedes in a similar situation, do not bring on military experts, but instead joining the so-called anti-terrorist experts in the studio were psychologists, ministers, sociologists, hospital physicians, and so forth. They even gave a hotline for people who were upset and wanted someone to talk to, and a number of far-right wingers who might be upset about this too and wanted to talk to a counselor. I cannot imagine U.S. media showing any sort of restraint and reflection, but rather, I imagine any event like this becomes a chance to ratchet up the excitement, scoop the other broadcasters, hold airtime, increase market share, be media stars. But on Norwegian TV, while waiting for hard evidence about the perpetrator and the condition of the victims and other on-site reporting, much of the discussion was about the nature of democracy, the need for openness and not having oppressive preventative lockdowns on society, even at the risk of tragedies like this. Stoltenberg, the Prime Minister, said, "We must never give up our values. We must show that our open society can pass this test too, that the answer to violence is even more democracy," on Friday, the day of the shooting. I cannot help but contrast that with W. "It is awful," says Scott, "to be inured to tragedies like this. When I first heard about it, I was not even shocked. There is little that shocks anymore. Tragedies like this have become commonplace in that there are a few every year someplace in the world. I did not break down and cry until the interview with some of their trailer folk camping along the shores of the lake. These were not the people on Utoya, but generally middle-aged, middle-class people who either cannot afford or do not want to take a trip abroad for their vacation. As soon as they heard the shooting and saw people swimming away from the island, they collected the 5 or 6 small motorboats at the campsite and sped out to rescue the swimmers, in full knowledge that the shooter was still taking shots at the swimmers. This decency, this courage in the face of grave personal risk, makes me cry. I need to know that such courage and decency is still among us and jumps into action when needed. I cry out of a sense of relief that such people exist as a moral counterweight to all the dreadful news to which we are subjected daily." One of the men took his small boat out. He was upset because the boat was too small to take everyone in one same trip. They had to go back to shore with those he had rescued and then return for more swimmers. And he didn't know if maybe somebody drowned because he wasn't capable of plucking them all up and had to do some sort of extemporaneous triage. They had to ask swimmers if they could wait for the next trip. "I'm so proud of these people for an impromptu rescue in harm's way, and how after it was over they shunned any sort of heroizing and were still worried about whether those they left behind made it into another boat or had swum to shore and were safe. It is all too easy to rant and curse these right-wingers and their culture of hatred. The anti-Islamic websites are every bit as ugly as far-right-wing websites anywhere. The graphics they use are reminiscent of Nazi Germany's, but with a bearded, turbaned Muslim replacing the bearded, big-nosed Jew. The perpetrator was a loner, a misfit, had such poor social skills that he was still living with his mother a decade after most leave home. He did not fit in, and so was prey to this ugly culture of hatred, accepting the scapegoat pushed upon him as the explanation of why Norway did not accept him and his image of what Norway should have been. This profile is all too like that of many Islamic youths who also go postal." So true, Scott, because, you know, alienation and a sense of hopelessness are the fodder upon which this kind of hatred feeds. That's me, not Scott. "Childhood, adolescence, and young adulthood are very hard times on the mind, and while it forms the neural connections that last a lifetime, the Norwegian right-wing terrorist presumably had his material needs met, yet something was not psychologically right. Many Islamic jihadists also come from the middle-class backgrounds, do not fit in, and the psychology goes astray. And in their confusion, they stumble upon or have thrust upon them a quick and dirty conspiracist explanation of who is really to blame for everything that ails them. You know, it's always them, those, the other, they. Never we. Never we." Scott continues, "It seems so clear to me, at least, that the true problem is mental health. Growing up, maturation, but above all, troubled youth must have access to good counseling, including wise friends, parents, uncles and aunts, teachers, social workers, spiritual leaders, cultural leaders. So take a troubled youth, one who seeks out violent fantasies in groups like Al-Qaeda or white power, and an entertainment culture oozing with excessively violent imagery, and the need for identifying and intervening with these youths by providing them a more meaningful existence seems a no-brainer. And certainly the earlier the better. While the brain is plastic, as the Catholic Church knows, it is the stuff crammed in there in the first years that forms the foundation of life. Early imagery, experiences, and context matter, and providing positive, socially supportive, must certainly help hold the incidence of these tragedies down. But I'm betting, Scott says, that the extended discussion about this horrible incident will scarcely touch upon this theme, except in Scandinavia. Because even on the night it happened, Scandinavians were talking about this. Much of the discussion, even on Friday, when it finally became clear who the perpetrator was about what went wrong and why. Even after some radical fundamentalist religion does something nasty abroad, Scandinavians ask similar questions. But when it is one of our own who flips out, the soul-searching really begins. I have not yet heard, nor do I want to hear, the American media discuss this. I can already hear the American right-wing media wanting to put some of the blame on Islam for provoking this disturbed individual. Well, and Scott, you heard it. Everybody else did, too. Pamela Geller. This man was goaded on by Islamic separatists. Fox will not defend the man, but they will instead be indignant and attack people like us who are suggesting that far-wing right-wing propaganda played a role in this man's trajectory. This is my prediction in any case. Send the toaster. Send the toaster wrapped in black to Scott on that one. Not that it took great powers of prophecy or being struck down in the Holy Spirit. It's just a matter of after you know how they behave long enough, you can begin to predict them because it is easy. Scott continues, I would hope that everyone would explore the commonality of terrorism and terrorists, no matter what their ideology, and try to think up ways to keep those individuals from growing so violent over the long gestation periods that are typical. As I see it, solutions must include economic justice, meaningful work for all individuals, and a cultural feeling that the future is getting better. On this last point, the prevalent pessimism caused by neoliberal economics, rapacious capitalism, environmental degradation, and the triviality of popular culture seem to me a fertile petri dish for disturbed youths to have their psychological well-being short-circuited by the violent shortcut fantasies that hate mongers provide. Carve that one in stone, please. Clearly, Norway's material welfare state was no insulation against a domestic terrorist, but I cannot see how weakening welfare states with these god-awful austerity state budgets are going to do anything to alleviate this sort of madness. To the contrary, I predict that the rates of mass killings will go up as material welfare declines. Anybody want to take Scott's bet? Because if you do, I got the money on Scott because he's right. Such acts as this will rise as material welfare goes down. Hopelessness is a fundamental element of this kind of horror. So, as Scott winds up, he says, so what are my chances of discussing this sanely with the teabagger? As said above concerning Fox, I will be called the extremist for suggesting that there is any material and cultural basis behind terrorism. They will tell me, clearly, if he was white, it was only a madman, and there really is nothing that can be done except possibly heightened monitoring and making sure that all the right people, i.e. conservatives, have guns. And if he was an outsider, currently Muslims fit this bill, then what do you expect? That's who they are. P.S. My son told me at supper a few minutes ago that the British news report he listened to on was already using the crazy man meme, and that politics had little to do with it. Like hell. Without the political overlay, he might have flipped out in a bar and just got into a fight with someone who took him the wrong way. Tell me, Bob, have American conservatives already started saying that the Norwegians should arm the general population to prevent this from ever happening again? Or have they already begun using this tragic incident to say that Americans should all be armed, yada, yada? With best regards to you and all the hornies, Scott. I personally don't think, between Michael's letter and Scott's, and there was more from Scott, I don't think you could have gotten any better coverage from any of the for-profit media under any circumstance. because the for-profit media coverage sucked. Because it's all crazy man.
Well, obviously, he was a lone crazy man. Crazy man. Had to be crazy. Got to be crazy to do something like that.
It's funny that we use that crazy man meme in a culture that calls itself something on the order of 80% Christian. You'd think that they would know works of evil when they see it. This isn't crazy. This is evil. It reminds me of that passage from one of the books about the Mexica culture. Are you Tlawele, friend, or merely Xolopitli? We've talked about that before. Are you dangerously criminally insane, or just a goofball? This guy was Tlawele. Dangerous, hateful. And it's not going away. Part of this having to do with the fact that religious institutions have failed. You know that religious institutions have failed because fundamentalism is on the rise. Whenever fundamentalism is on the rise, that means that the essential tenets of any given faith have gone sideways. This guy was a fundamentalist. He was a global warming denier, it turns out. He was he said he wanted to set up a Tea Party system in the EU. He was a follower of the Prince of Peace. Kind of hard to get your head around, isn't it? But it's true. Too sadly true. So, we find ourselves, as ever, asking, you know, why? Why? Always why. And there's an answer, really. Our buddy Dennis sent me an editorial piece that came from the Los Angeles Times. He saw it in the Lexington Herald Leader. It's an opinion piece by J. Anderson Thompson and Claire Okafor. Before John Lennon imagined living life in peace, he conjured no heaven, no hell below us, and no religion too. No religion. What was Lennon summoning? For starters, a world without divine messengers like Osama bin Laden, sparking violence, a world where mistakes like the avoidable loss of life in Hurricane Katrina would be rectified rather than chalked up to God's will, where politicians no longer compete to prove who believes more strongly in the irrational and untenable, where critical thinking is an ideal, in short, a world that makes sense. In recent years, scientists specializing in the mind have begun to unravel religion's DNA. They have produced robust theories backed by empirical evidence, including imaging studies of the brain at work, that support the conclusion that it was humans who created God, not the other way around. And the better we understand the science, the closer we can come to no heaven, no hell, and no religion too. Like our physiological DNA, the psychological mechanisms behind faith evolved over the eons through natural selection. They helped our ancestors work effectively in small groups and survive and reproduce. Traits developed long before recorded history from foundations deep in our mammalian primate and African hunter-gatherer past. For example, we are born with a powerful need for attachment identified as long ago as the 1940s by psychiatrist John Bowlby and expanded on by psychologist Mary Ainsworth. Individual survival was enhanced by protectors beginning with our mothers. Attachment is reinforced physiologically through brain chemistry, and we evolved and retained neural networks completely dedicated to it. We easily expand that inborn need for protectors to authority figures of any sort, including religious leaders and, more saliently, gods. God becomes a super parent, able to protect us and care for us even when our more corporeal support systems disappear through death or distance. Scientists have so far identified about 20 hardwired evolved adaptations as the building blocks of religion. Like attachment, they're mechanisms that underlie human interactions. Brain imaging studies at the National Institutes of Health showed that when test subjects were read statements about religion and asked to agree or disagree, the same brain networks that process human social behavior, our ability to negotiate relationships with others, were engaged. Among the psychological adaptations related to religion are our need for reciprocity, our tendency to attribute known events to human agency, our capacity for romantic love, our fierce out-group hatreds, and just as fierce loyalties to the in-groups of kin and allies. Religion hijacks these traits. The rivalry between Sunni and Shiite Muslims, for example, or the doctrinal battles between Protestant and Catholic reflect our groupish tendencies. This thing goes on at some length. Closing. The better we understand human psychology and neurology, the more we will uncover the underpinnings of religion. Some of them, like the attachment system, push us toward a belief in gods and make departing from it extraordinarily difficult. But it is possible. We can be better as a species if we recognize religion as a man-made construct. We owe it to ourselves to at least consider the real roots of religious belief, so we can deal with life as it is, taking advantage of perhaps our mind's greatest adaptation, the ability to use reason. And the authors close saying, imagine that. You could say, and I think Scott describes it aptly without using the words, you could say that perhaps this murderer, this Christian killer, was suffering from an existential crisis. Such existential crises are often brought on by having one's unchallengeable faith run up against immovable realities. And bad things happen thereafter. These are existential crises. People whose faith compels them to kill, to murder, to maim, because their personal realities cannot, for some reason, coexist with impersonal culture, which is made worse, as Scott noted, by a vapid popular culture, by a sense of rootlessness, by failures in education. You know, there was a study out, I think, from the Center for American Progress, or I'm not sure who it was. I'll have it here in a second. It's fascinating. Campaign for America's Future. Yeah, our buddy's there. Campaign for America's Future, Institute for Policy Studies. Researcher by the name of Sam Pizzagatti has discovered that if corporations and the rich paid taxes at the same level as the 1960s, the so-called debt about which people are freaking out, this dumb show that people have been suckered into, that debt would disappear. It would probably come close to disappearing if we went back to Nixon's tax rates. A lot of problems would go away if we went to Reagan's tax rates. But never in the for-profit media will you hear any teabagger who venerates. They all must venerate it. It's an article of faith that Ronald Reagan was something approaching a saint. Never once will you hear a cantor or a boner asked, well, if Ronald Reagan was such a great man, why don't we go back to the tax rates that he endorsed? Sorry. The for-profit media can't do that because they have skin in that game, and they, you know, you have any idea what back before he keeled over and went to his long home. You have any idea what Tim Russert was making for babbling for an hour every Sunday? Yeah, there's a lot of high tax bracket income. I don't want to pay any more tax. Goddamn, you know. Have any idea how much a good bottle of gin costs these days? Heroin's, it seems like heroin's going up every week. Yeah, the for-profit media. But just to put a sort of a bookend on all of this, I commend to you an article at Crooks and Liars by our good friend Dave Nywert. David in Tennessee sent this along to me. It's from July 22nd. The new McCarthyism, Oregon Tea Partiers invade quiet move-on picnic, break it up with threats, and boast about it. We've got a little of what we used to call in the business gnat sound. This is a boasting video posted by the teabaggers. MoveOn.org moves on with help from their friends. Now bear in mind, this is a small handful of people on a sort of typical midsummer day in southern Oregon. Mostly older folks. They're getting together for a picnic. They're not singing the Internationale. They're not screaming, "Workers of the world, unite, you have nothing to lose but your chains." Well, that's a pretty good idea, really. They're having a flippin' picnic. That's when they are invaded by the teabaggers.
Yeah, head back to GT in California.
The leader's going to be here. And if you can grab one of the bottles of liquid, and you can get the device and try it to
because you're leaving?
The golden retriever is looking out the window right
there. She wants help with the bottles. I'll help. Okay, I mean, if you leave, I'll help.
I know dogs allowed in the park.
I don't know.
That's what she said.
Where are you going?
Yeah, I'm going to
the instrument. I'm silly. I don't know if you're
Van Jones?
What does Art Robinson have to do with us? You see him here?
So the teabaggers carrying their flags and telling people to leave a public space assault a peaceful gathering in Oregon. Here's where it gets even more interesting. They followed them home. The teabaggers followed the move-on picnickers to the home of one of the picnickers where they were going to continue their get-together. They followed them there. They refused to leave private property. On the video, this is, as Dave Nywert notes at Crooks and Liars, this is how they bragged about it. This is what the teabaggers said.
Self-professed communist Van Jones teams up with MoveOn.org.
He wasn't anywhere in sight. It was a little picnic, for Christ's sakes.
to promote the American Dream Project, a.k.a. I Want What You Have Worked For. Promoted here by the Douglas County Democratic Central Committee members. Challenged by Americans who love freedom. I have an idea. Let's end class warfare. If you want more, get up earlier and work harder. It works wonders for your self-respect. We had to disable comments. They were vile, vulgar, threatening. Typical Chicago thuggery stuff. Roseburg, Oregon. One of the people gathered there was Lillian Furfield. She's 70 years old. That's what these brave, bold teabaggers do. They go shove septuagenarians around. Conservative organizers. Jesus. Conservative organizers defended their actions and said they will continue to protest similar gatherings. Because, you know, in their America, all flag-draped and Bible-wrapped, freedom of assembly no longer exists. And there is not a damn dime's worth of difference between these teabag thugs and the murderous bastard in Norway. Ideologically speaking, they are the same people. Oregon. Oregon. There was a story today about a stabbing at the Capitol in Wisconsin, in Madison. This is our world. And the for-profit media will not call these bastards on it. Because the for-profit media are as corrupt as anyone else. They're as corrupt as the teabaggers with their, I won't do what Glenn Beck did. What did he say? If you have a political camp, it's like sort of like the Hitler Youth. But you see, fascists don't understand reason. Fascists exist by force. And that's the trouble with fascists. Is that they are difficult to resist by nonviolence. But I give great credit to these decent people in Oregon because they were not violent. Even when the teabaggers invaded their home, their private property, they were not violent. But I also didn't see any follow-up on this saying that any of these teabagging, miserable, sorry, pathetic excuses for members of the human race were behind bars where they most assuredly deserved to be. So at 6 minutes before the hour, that is where we find ourselves on this first day of a new week, this 25th of July, this Monday. We will take a brief break and come back. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. And we do sincerely need that support. It is thin, to say the least, and there are a lot of bills yet to be paid. So we'll be back. Okay? You know the number, right? 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D at gmail.com. We'll be right back.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap. There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius. We got your soap right here.
And other bath and body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Sorry for the crappy audio. My microphone, mainly. We are approaching a point where certain things are going to happen. That may happen up in August. John and I have been discussing it some. It'll take a couple of days, to say the least. But it's like something's coming in and out. I don't know. Maybe I'm finally losing another 3 amp or something. So, you know, I'll just ask you to bear with me and not send me... trust me, if it's fixable, we'll get it fixed. But, you know, there's a reason that I say things like, you know, listener supported and we've got to have your support and stuff like that, because, well, we really do. Because when problems like this arise, we can't fix them without your support. You know, when we closed the broadcast day on Friday, we were in about, a $480 hole. That got alleviated to be about a $450 hole over the weekend. But as the course time passes, the hole gets deeper again. And that was just to get to the halfway mark of fundraising for July. The struggle continues apace. But suffice to say, if we were including the second half of July, the hole would be about $1,600. Yeah. 17. Right? So, just saying, PayPal button's out there. If you can help, it sure would be nice. Head on RadioNetwork.com. The tab is Contribute. PayPal, snail mail, makes no never mind to us. I'm just hearing in from our chief engineer, John Fox. He's still working via mobile internet, expects to have his hardwired by next week. He's in the process of a move. Those are always such fun, not. But we'll work on it. We'll get there. You know, our buddy Benedict at Large says he was writing to me and to Rick Smith. And he says, for the past several weeks, I've been screaming that the debt ceiling crisis is a fraud created by misunderstanding or deliberate misrepresentation of the basic accounting structures involved with government debt. Specifically, that unlike you and I, unlike states and corporations, the federal government uniquely does not incur any liability when it borrows in its own currency, as the U.S. always does. This is basic accounting, Benedict says in all caps, not some fancy economic theory. This is significant because since the government does not, we cannot be borrowing from our children's futures, as the president and the GOP are suggesting, because there is no specific liability from this borrowing to pass on to them. This is further significant because, as if the GOP is demanding, and as the president seems to agree, we try to pay back this non-existent liability, we will be collapsing our hard money base, an act that can only lead to a depression from which we would be unable to emerge using their incorrect economic beliefs. Benedict continues for a bit, but he says, now it should be noted that the other prominent liberal economists, most notably Paul Krugman, have been issuing warnings in the same direction, but even Krugman is misinformed as to the exact mechanism by which this will occur. Krugman believes in crowding out, for example, and argues for an indefensible Keynesian viewpoint. And so they are woefully unprepared to make solid and irrefutable arguments against cuts to government spending, the same cuts that both Mosler and I agree, Warren Mosler, would be disastrous at any time, and most especially at this time. Crowding out being that, crowding out is a neoliberal doctrine that says that federal borrowing does not and cannot put pressure on other borrowers by increasing the interest rate for borrowing. Warren Mosler concludes with a dire assessment, we are all dead ducks if the president continues to be so misled by his obviously right-wing advisors and prepare for the very worst. So there's something of the carnival midway in all of the budget discussions, isn't there? Yeah. Ray writing in and noting, hey, Bob, hate to say it, but due to general apathy on most Americans' part, the Republicans are winning and will keep doing so. Money doesn't talk, Ray notes. It swears. Juanita says, Bob, Michelle Bachmann said the teabaggers are the nicest people who only do good. So, Bob, you're wrong about these wonderful people. Clayton writing in of the thugs in Oregon. Modern brown shirts? Why, yes, modern brown shirts. Indeed. Ron in Raleigh says, I've been receiving robocalls for the last few weeks to join Americans for Prosperity tomorrow at the legislature building downtown to protest Governor Bev Perdue's job-killing vetoes of the typical ALEC-generated legislative slate. How these blackguards got my number, I don't know, since I've been a registered Democrat since Jesus was a Cub Scout. I wish there'd been a real person on the other end of the line. They would have needed a fire extinguisher to put out the fire my reply would have caused. These people who are cut from the same cloth as the Norwegian mama's boy terrorist are the worst liars and self-involved swine I can imagine. There's a word, swine. And I hate a robocall. Jesus, but I hate a robocall. To the phones, where the calls aren't robo. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, so, I mean, you know, terrorism is, you know, usually defined as the use of violence, you know, in the pursuit of political aims. So I'm not too sure if you can be calling this fool a crazy, because the camp he went to wasn't just some Disneyland camp. It was a camp full of people engaged in political activity. Labor.
Yes.
The party that he hates because they represent multiculturalism, which he thinks is destroying Northern Europe. And it's like, this dude is a classic terrorist. There's no way you can reduce it unless you believe that terrorism is only when Muslims commit violence. Now, if you believe that definition, then whatever. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely, I do, Sandra.
You know, and that's the problem in this country, is that people associate terrorism with just sort of brown people blowing themselves up
there.
Or flying right. planes or whatever the fuck they do. But this fool right here, it's Tea Party Norway style, because his ideology, if you read some of his sort of manifesto shit, it really is no different. If you just put Tea Party in instead of Norway fascist, it's the same thing.
It absolutely is, and among other things, that I don't. Did you see the video, Sandra? With all that?
No, I didn't see the video, but you know, it's funny when that first happened, and I heard about the bombing. You know, I honestly have to say I didn't first think of no Muslims. I'm thinking of shit. That's Northern Europe. And, you know, the right wing is getting stronger there. I swear to God, I was thinking, God knows what this is. So not everyone is jumping to the conclusion that every event like this is automatically Muslims. If you know what I mean?
Well, I wasn't there either.
You know, I wasn't. I was just like, well, this is, I was thinking how nightmarish because of the sort of open, you know, for real liberal democracy that's there up there, and you wonder how they're going to respond. And thankfully, they're pretty impressive people because their response is like more democracy. And I'm like, damn, all right now, you know, because that's not what they're being told to do here. You know, I think the security state is ready to sell them all kinds of goodies. Okay.
Well, yeah, lots of bombs and concrete walls and
surveillance and the whole nine yards. But I mean, anyway, it's just like, you know, the whole thing is just horrific. I'm just thinking about, oh my God, you know, those young people,
children,
and this man can only get 21 years, which is also very interesting, I guess, as a byproduct of their society. And
well, Norway eliminated the death penalty in something like 1905.
But, you know, you really have to I think, I don't know if it was Scott or someone mentioned it, because the key thing that I took away from those emails was, once again, the living standard is being driven down around the world, including Northern Europeans, by these sort of free market, neoliberal things that are, like, slipping in everywhere. And the working classes of those societies are the ones going to take the brunt of it, even in those fairly equal societies. And they're going to become less equal with the whole European continent right now is having their standard of living driven down. That is the sort of trend.
And let's make no mistake, Sandra, at least as far as I can tell, the neoliberals who want to crush the social welfare state, they want to start where it's strongest. They want to destroy it in Norway. They want to destroy it in Sweden and Denmark.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, and it's sort of, you know, that is the sort of warning signs that you have to look for, because I think I read that the immigration population in Norway is 500,000 out of 5 million people or so. So, and it's in, and that increased dramatically, I guess, in the last few years. But still, I mean, it's really not that. I don't know. I don't know what the percentage of that is, but yeah, I'm sure this guy isn't the only one, you know, and it's interesting that...
Well, he has said through his lawyer now that he has two other cells.
Yeah, well, I'm still tripping. My eyes are burning from the outfits. It's like, dude, the sort of fucked up marine outfit he was wearing, and then the wetsuit with the gun poses, and...
this has got to make some people over here just cringe. Did you see did you see the photo of him in all of his Masonic Lodge garb?
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying, but it's also mixed up and bizarre. I'm thinking, oh, man, you know, and,
Well, he's got that whole fascination with the Knights Templar.
Yeah,
when you go down the Knights Templar rabbit hole, I mean, there's a, you know, they have a real history, and it is a fascinating history. But you know, these people are not interested in that kind of thing. They're interested in the sort of esoterica, aesthetic, magic, you know, hoodoo, voodoo.
Well, I thought that the Templars, they were sort of trying to preserve some aspect of Catholicism, aren't they?
Well, they were the poor soldiers of Jesus Christ in their original incarnation, and
they were
warrior monks, and they had a very severe rule. They were blessed by the Pope, and led the first Crusades.
Yeah.
But they were, because they were suppressed a couple of hundred years later by a French king, a whole mythology rose up about them because of, among other things, the fact that the dummied up evidence that was used against them by the French by the French king, with the connivance of the French church, involved them, like, you know, having sex with Jesus's eye sockets in his skull, and they'd found the body, and desecrating the cross and urinating on, they just, all these typical medieval allegations of just nastiness that could get you burnt at the stake in a hurry. And so there's this stuff that rises up around them, how they found the secret wisdom of how Solomon built the temple and yada yada. These guys were illiterate, Sandra. They were illiterate. And yet, you know, they, and so it comes forward, you know, is real big in the 18th century, real big in the 19th century, held on in the 20th, and I guess there's a resurgence, especially among the neo-Nazi-ish right wing now, that sees them as some sort of resurrected saviors of a white Europe.
Hmm.
Because after all,
can you hear me? I think this phone's going weird.
No, I can. I hear you. No, it's me.
Oh,
it's,
okay.
It's problems on my end. I've got something dying over here. On, you know, and what a time to find it out. But it's got to be remembered that the reason these people congregate around the Templars is because the Templars fought the Muslims, and, you know, never mind the fact that they also invaded the Muslims. They are seen as defenders of Christian Europe. Oops. You know.
Well, I mean, the thing is, though, unfortunately, the media here is still not letting go of the Muslim meme. They're trying to mix it in somehow.
Oh, yeah. Pamela Geller saying that, well, he was at least motivated by them, even if he wasn't one. It's just like if he was one. Well, he was a jihadist, was what he was. It's sickening what these people are doing.
Well, she should be hogtied. God, she's outrageous, that woman. I mean, I don't know. I don't really know what to think, but I would like to think that the Norwegian society is not going to collapse on itself trying to protect itself, you know, and go into that mode like we did here.
I hope.
I mean,
you know, and I like that. I've got faith in them. I think that they won't, because they really do value their society. You know, if they look at anything, they'll look at police response time, because that would be the rational thing to do. Because if there's anything to criticize there, it's the fact that the SWAT team got there in, you know, what, 45 minutes instead of 15.
Well, you know, it's just, I mean, I know they had some helicopter that wasn't available, and, you know, I mean, I've read different stories about it. I don't know, but I certainly, you know, it's scary with the whole Christian crusade hell, because that's what he is.
And that's what, but that's what these freaks want, Sandra. They want this badly. They want to, because you can't overlook the fact that all, remember, this guy was a Christian fundamentalist.
Right.
And these guys, these people, men and women both, you know, they ache for Armageddon. They yearn for worldwide warfare that will just tear the whole planet apart.
Well, he had this whole manifesto, you know, 2083, come to find out that's the 200th anniversary of Karl Marx's death, and it's just like, oh dear God, you know what I mean? So the whole culturalism, and, you know, they remind us, I read this article I read in the Der Spiegel, that Merkel and Cameron have both denounced multiculturalism as dead. So, you know, you gotta look at the source. That's supposedly mainstream politicos saying this shit. So Europe is in flux. Let's say that.
And I think more headed that way. But again, the answer is not to crack down. Well, it's like that old thing that Judge Learned Hand said in our own jurisprudence, in a correspondence debate that he had with Oliver Wendell Holmes. He said the remedy to bad speech is not to suppress the bad speech. The remedy to bad speech is more speech.
Well, yeah, and just the sunshine whole principle.
And
yeah,
the marketplace of ideas and everything
right.
that goes with it, right.
Yeah, I don't know. I shudder for the parents of those poor children, and I'm grateful that the number of victims have been brought down now. Have you heard that? It's 68, not 92.
Right. I guess because some folks got found.
So I mean that's, you know, I'm glad to hear that it's going lower and not higher. But if I may just sort of mention a different subject, this I have to talk about this madness in Washington. Now apparently at 6, you know, we're going to be serenaded by Obama. I mean, what is he going to say? I mean, this dude is so far in a corner now. Because they're going to call his bluff, and is he going to veto it? This is my question. It's like, you know, Obama, have fun with it, because they just called his bluff, you know?
And you saw the response of Harry Reid, I suppose.
Well, you mean that the 2.7
cut
no revenue hell?
Right.
Oh, God. I mean, and another thing that I don't know if this is for real, but this Politburo, 12-person committee's extra-constitutional bullshit they're talking about. Have you heard about this? The Super Congress?
I have.
Where are we at? Where are we living? You know? I mean, that sounds like just some way to strip our rights, benefits, whatever else we get living in this country. That's what that sounds like that can possibly do.
Well, I mean, if you're talking, when you start talking that, and I think Politburo is a good word to use, Sandra, you're talking about a fundamental sort of not unconstitutional but extra constitutional restructuring of the whole idea of our government.
Well, that's what I'm saying, and when you do that in a society like this, you know how I call the U.S. a project-based society, okay? Well, the project is being altered in order to facilitate a plutocracy ruled by the rich. This is the takeaway from this to me. Oh, listen, the takeaway, that's another word we can put on our list.
Oh, the takeaway.
Well, anyway, but I'll use it anyway. The takeaway is that, you know, I mean, I realize it's simplistic, but I do think what we're looking at now is the rich attacking the rest of us. This is what this whole thing seems to feel like to me.
Oh, it's open warfare. And it's,
right.
it goes back to our extended and continuing theory of they want it all.
Well, I have to flag George Carlin. I mean, that fool called it. He said they coming after your Social Security and they will get it. Remember that little spiel he gave, like, not soon before he died?
There's a big club, and you're not in it.
You're right. But within that little spiel, he was talking about, and next they're coming for your Social Security. And it's just like, well, I'll be goddamn. Here we are.
And see, that, you know, that's another manifestation, Sandra, of the danger of using the word never. Because I think a lot of people believed Eisenhower's letter when he said, you know, any political party that tries to destroy Social Security will cease to become a blah, 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 blah. And so we thought, well, you know, they'll never touch Social Security.
Well, no, but it's selective believing.
They want to. They've hated it since it was born.
Well, it's selective believing because he also said beware of the industrial congressional military complex, too. So, you know, Eisenhower was chock full of interesting advice, that man.
Oh, without a doubt, and but you know that's a Republican Party that no longer exists, Sandra.
Well, no, but the Republican Party, I don't know. I mean, apparently they've just rejected Boehner's plan too. because they're not interested in the Super Congress for their own reason, because they're scared that it will be able to raise taxes. If we're scared they'll just strip rights away. They're scared that it'll be another way to raise taxes. But my question to them is, how do you plan on funding what little government you have if there's no taxes at all? Please to answer that for me, Bob.
Well, no, you bring up something that I was ruminating on earlier. They want to kill Medicare, and they go, oh, we're going to replace it with vouchers. Well, those vouchers are not going to cover 100% of the cost of for-profit delivered health care, so that means that people are going to be falling off the rolls. And that's going to affect the healthcare industry, and that's going to affect doctors. How are the Republicans going to feel when the doctors and the insurance companies talk about, you know, their revenues are down, yada, yada, yada? I mean, they're talking about collapsing the medical system, too.
Well, if I may, you know, possibly at risk of bringing in some more cognitive distortion, what's going to happen to them people who get dropped off from the rolls? I'm sorry. I'm going to be stuck in my die-off. I have to ask, what happens to those people, Bob?
And that's, they go die.
Okay.
You know,
right.
I mean, what's going to happen is people are going to be out of work when the nurse, I mean, this is, deserves some thought. The nursing homes are going to close. You know, that's where we warehouse our old humans now.
Well, no, but I think the point you're making is that these Congress people are clueless about what government really does, because they're in their fantasy ideology that doesn't exist, because, you know, they don't have any idea what will happen if they remove government from the different aspects of life that they think isn't contributing to it. I don't know how else to say it. It's like people. The government is huge in America. It's a major force in everyone's fucking life.
Right. That's the question I was asking. That's the question I was asking last week about, you know, if the government shuts down and food stamps don't go out. Well, you're going to get a lot of hateful phone calls to a lot of congressional offices from Ralph's and Kroger's and Publix and Walmart, because they're not going to be getting their welfare. It's worth remembering, for instance, that, you know, as our buddy Tosh reminded me earlier today, you know, the food stamp program was never conceived as a means of humane assistance to the poor and the hungry. It was a farm program.
Yeah, right. More subsidies for excess farm goods.
Tosh pointed out earlier today, and I kind of went, what? But I know he's right. That the earliest incarnations of this kind of thing was a situation where in the post-World War I world, we literally bought excess cattle, excess hogs, excess chickens from farmers and just killed them and destroyed them. And then somebody came along and said, you know, why don't we give this to poor people? It ain't going to cost us nothing.
Right.
Oh, well, okay, let the poor have it. And, you know, suddenly you've got people standing in line for government cheese.
Yeah, well, I mean, no, but that should, yeah.
And then food stamps comes along because the retail side wants in on it.
Right.
So, you know, then you've got the middleman and the markup. I mean, the entire grocery complex of the United States, Sandra, is built on social welfare. Because you know what? You take that food stamp money away, and Walmart and Kroger's and all the others are a very different place.
Well, and the 20% that everyone, or I forget the percentage, but it's like every out of $10, $2 is all, you know, government, money from the government. It's just sort of, I mean, these are just staggering numbers here, because we are talking about, you know, a quarter of a billion people here.
Well, and so, there's one other factor that's kind of funny too, Sandra, and that is, you remember this crazy bastard Steve King from Iowa, right?
Yeah.
Okay, he has declared that if we default, the president will be impeached. Now, I find that a very interesting prospect. Because if President Not Sure doesn't think they won't do it, he needs to pick up the phone and call his buddy Bill. because a Republican House will impeach over anything.
Well, no, if this House is Boehner can't even get a plan together, I swear these people, they want the default. I think they just want it to happen.
Yeah, they want it the way. Well, it reminds me. Sorry. It reminds me of being a little kid. You know, I'd build these models of these battleships and stuff, and, you know, worked really hard on them. But it's no fun if you don't watch them blow up. And you don't necessarily know what's going to happen when the M-80 blows up in the middle of your model of the USS Missouri, but you're pretty sure it's going to make a big noise and a lot of smoke. And that's what these Republicans want. They want to see the economy blow up. They want to see the whole country blow up just to see what it looks like.
Well, yeah, it's just bizarre, but listen, I don't know if you got that email. I know I sent you a lot. It was just kind of out of control today, but the one that I really was rolling on was the Henry Waxman thing. Did you read that?
Yes, I did.
The quote. Let me tell you a little story about Waxman. You know, I kind of vaguely know him because my mother used to clean his house in the 70s because he lived in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm almost ready to call the damn office because I was like, what? Shit. You know, I couldn't believe that he actually said that. And, you know, Obama's response, what? You know, I'm the president. I mean, I just thought the whole thing was so telling. It's like, wow, he really has sowed a lot of mistrust, I think.
I don't think, you know, he's not so much sowed it as earned it, hasn't he?
Well, okay, but I mean, and the thing is, this was, you know, because, I don't know, I just thought the whole Waxman, because I know Waxman is fairly, you know, a bit of a tough customer, but I was even taken aback by that.
Well, yeah, this quote, because, and you know, how does this not just sound like a whole bunch of the people we hear talking amongst ourselves? Because of the extent to which the president had allowed the Republicans to set the terms of the debate, the attitude of numerous congressional Democrats toward him became increasingly sour, even disrespectful. After Obama introduced popular entitlement programs into the budget fight, a Democratic senator described the attitude of a number of his colleagues as resigned disgust at the White House. There they go again. Mr. Halfway keeps getting maneuvered around as Republicans move the goalposts on him. And Waxman saying to a person, they said the president's going to cave. And if you're going to cave, tell us right now. And Obama says, I'm the president of the United States. My words carry weight.
Bubble, I don't know what planet. But anyway, I have to say that I will be listening to the speech tonight, just out of...
Yeah, what time does that go down? Is that 9 o'clock?
At 6 o'clock. Part-time. So 9 o'clock, yeah, after your show. But because I even just perverse curiosity at this point, because I'm so disturbed by what's going on. I don't, you know, I don't understand how they're letting this happen. You know what I mean? I feel like the war is on us.
Well, that's only because it is.
anyway, yeah. I'll let you go.
All right, you take care, Sandra.
Oh, wait.
Yes,
listen,
yes.
Listen, three cheers for the fucking NFL player. Shit, holding tough, hanging tough.
Standing up.
And got, you know, a fucking pretty good deal out of it. The owners really thought they was going to go to town. I said, wake up. Good morning.
And there's going to be a season, right?
Yeah, it's going to be a season. I mean, I realize this is like small potatoes in the big scheme of things, but...
No, you know what? No, it's not, Sandra.
But it's like a union of solidarity where they staged together, didn't fall apart, and won. Well, they got a deal that's manageable, and the best part, they don't have to do that two a day. Brutal shit. I thought that was interesting.
Two a days or something on the... In 2011, you know, by
ridiculous.
Now we've got the medicine and the science behind it. Two-a-days are just sadistic.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. So anyway, I don't know. I just was sort of, when I started looking into actually what they got, I thought, well, shit, that's all right, considering they were locked out.
And you say, well, it's no big deal, but, you know, frankly, it is. I mean, I'm one of those who says, I need to get away once in a while, and since I don't have a home in the Hamptons or, you know, a home in the country with a river of beer flowing over my grandmother's paisley shawl or any of that kind of stuff, you know, I need me some NFL on Sunday, and I need my college ball on Saturday, just so that I can open the mic on Monday evening and not start just drooling
Yeah, well, no, but I'm just, you know, I realize, you know, everyone's like, oh, millionaires, a little bit, but whatever. I am so happy to hear that they were able to get to buy into the health care forever, too. That's another thing that was shocking. They only had 5 years after they both have the most pre-existing conditions in the history of the world. So after 5 years, they couldn't get any health care, I'm sure.
And that's the thing, you know, once you started digging around, everybody wants to talk about, you know, Tom Brady or Peyton Manning and, you know, what they're... No, take them out of the equation. Look at the lineman who, you know, as we've talked about before, turns out to be the smartest man on the team, typically, in that testing. He's got the highest IQ. Take an offensive tackle who has a career of maybe 5 years. He might earn $1 million, $2 million a year. That's $10 million over the course of 10 years, but turn that into a lifespan, and dude ain't making much money, and he gets kicked out in the cold when it's over, and good luck, no workers' comp, no health care, congratulations.
No, and I don't know, I can't remember the guy's name who was in the new leader of the players' union, but can we recruit him for some other position?
No
That's
kidding.
More meaningful, because, my God, he worked them owners.
You think we could get him a weekend invite to Camp David?
I don't know, because the thing that brilliant move by him was to put them quarterbacks in the mix like he did. That shit was brilliant.
Yeah, because suddenly, you know, you weren't. It wasn't neon Deion Sanders. It was pretty white Tom Brady and pretty white Peyton Manning
and Drew Brees. And I'm just like, oh snap, with this fool. Anyway, I guess enough with the football. I have to say though, I was impressed by that man.
Well, and only I'm down to measuring weeks until college football season gets started in earnest. And you know, it gives it, God, you know, I know some people watch Dancing with the Stars. Some people watch American Idol. I talk about it in the negative. I apologize. My thing's college ball and NFL on Sunday.
Well, is the vest, did he find a job or is he done?
No, the vest is still looking.
Shut the hell
no,
up.
No, he'll be, no, he'll show up doing commentary side by side with Rich Rodriguez on CBS or ESPN or something. I can't wait.
Oh, no, Rodriguez, he's still at loose ends?
No, he found honest work. He's going to be doing commentary.
Shut up.
I can really wait for that.
Well, I'm hoping to see Kobe Bryant in China or Italy or Turkey. Anyway, listen, take care.
See you, Sandra. Bye now. Kobe in Turkey. Yeah, that'd be pretty good. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, besides pretty trees and wonderful scenery, Oregon has a couple other things it's famous for.
Rain?
Oh, and rain. Yeah, besides that.
Sorry, I'm such an ass about the rain. I apologize, Susan.
Hey, just be aware.
Blackberries?
The Pacific Northwest is the only area of the country over the past heat wave that has not proceeded to cook itself. Neener, neener, neener. Anyway.
I'm just going to forward you the hate mail, okay?
Anyway, what Oregon is also well known for in certain circles is along the banks of the Rogue River area and the Umpqua River congregate a certain species of Homo sapiens.
Is it a knuckle walking?
Survivalist.
Is it the knuckle walking Homo sapien?
Oh, these have been dragging their knuckles so long they don't have them anymore. They are so right wing, they've gone into complete survival mode. Anybody in that area, frankly, I'm shocked that they managed to get somebody from Move On to congregate there.
Well, I think it was It was that particular county's Democratic Executive Committee meeting, and it just, you know, they had some move on members there.
It's a surprise that you actually had some Democrats, because that entire area is so right wing and so they're nuts. They're insane.
Tough sledding for, I imagine they've got some sort of right wing freak teabagger for a Congress critter.
I don't know. I'm not even sure what district they're in. It could be that they might, they might be in one of the Democrats' district, but it's such a relatively small area population-wise, because it's basically this huge space with a very, very small population of people, because most of it's national forest.
I see.
And so there are people living on the fringes, the survivalists. But they can't live in the forest, you know, in the main forest, except, you know, by sliding in the way they do, because it's federal land. And, you know, that ticks them off. They want that land themselves. You know, they don't, that's one of their pet peeves, is the fact that it's federal land. It's a national forest.
Yeah, geez.
Well, yeah. Like I said, they're nuts.
Yeah, let me guess. They want to go in and cut all the trees down, and everybody has a spotted owl barbecue, right?
More or less.
Yes, God, I hate that thinking. I don't know if you caught it or not today, Susan, but I got a call from a friend of mine who said, Bob, are you watching C-SPAN? I said, well, not at the right moment. She said, you got to turn it on. These crazy little bastards are up to it again. And I said, what? She said, they're actually talking in the House of Representatives about opening the Grand Canyon to uranium mining and giving the uranium...
Oh, that's been on the table for quite a while.
Yeah, I know, but they were talking about it actively today. Giving the uranium away for free to a Middle Eastern country.
What, so they can make weapons grade plutonium?
Jesus, you know. And apparently they can't see downstream from the Grand Canyon that, you know, there's a lot of water involved with that.
Yeah. All of that water from the Colorado, guess where it goes?
In people's bellies? In their bathtubs?
And in their veggies.
Yep.
And the cost of food will just go, you know, well, good. Hey, guys, have you heard of something called the Imperial Valley?
Yep. Well, see, and that's the whole point, you know, what Sandra and I were talking about, the medical system, the food system. There is a wholesale effort on to collapse everything in this country.
Mm-hmm. Well, personally, I think that the Republicans are planning. That's why I asked you, I put that question in the show post the other day and gave you the answer. For one specific reason, because I think they're deliberately planning it, because they figure if they crash the economy, people generally vote their conscience, vote their pocketbook, and they would toss out the president. Never mind the fact that he didn't have anything to do with it.
Well, one of the things that Sandra said along earlier today was some polling data. And it was president, not sure, I'd be a little fretful. But of course, you know, he's got advisors telling him, no, everything's wonderful, sir.
Yeah.
In the latest Gallup polling data that Sandra sent me, headline: lack of money tops list of Americans' financial worries. Let's see, 17% lack of money, low wages. 12% health care costs, too much debt, not enough money to pay debts. 11, high cost of living, inflation. 9, unemployment, loss of job. 9%, energy costs, oil and gas prices. 7%, college expenses. 7%, state of the economy. 2%, social security. 2%, stock market. 1%, controlling government spending. Not statistically measurable.
Yeah. If he had a backbone, he would tell Boehner and his cronies on in front of God and everybody, stick it up your ears or orifices, and here's my plan to get these people working again. We're going to do a Roosevelt. We're going to put people to work.
But see, Susan, and this is where, well, it makes me sad to say it, for starters, but...
I don't think he's got it.
Well, I don't think, it's not a matter of courage. It's a matter of he doesn't share that philosophy.
I don't think he does either. I think the giveaway was during the transition. He was busily reading about Lincoln and Reagan when he should have been reading about FDR.
That's about the size of it. I'm prone to read all kinds of stuff, Susan, just to get my mind off things. I've been reading the wacky Florida crime fiction of one Tim Dorsey lately. When I'm not reading that, I'm rereading Dune. And I understand the need to get away, but you know what? Putting Ronald Reagan on your summer reading list.
Oh, God.
But really, I don't think he believes in the New Deal.
No, I don't think he does either.
And so, consequently, hoping that he might act at some point the light's going to go on. No. These are all proponents of Hoover-esque economy.
Yeah. And it's working just like Hoover's did.
You mean not?
Yeah.
Oh, too true. Well, I had a feeling when I mentioned the Oregon story that you might chime in and tell us a little bit about that region because...
It's
not like that's the thing. When I was watching the video, it's not like there were just like all kinds of people there. It was a bunch of gray-haired folks. I imagine if I had been there, I would have been the kid.
Yeah, the Roseburg area is south of Eugene. Eugene is a very liberal area. It's a college town. And
a fine place, I'm told. A fun place.
Yeah, the Roseburg area is even further way south of that, even further. It's down by Boring and places like that. And where, my daughter taught in a small town down there. It was called Drain, of all places. We have fun names here. And she finally gave it up after a couple of years because the kids were not interested in learning college level math. What they wanted to do was get out of high school and go to work in the pulp mill.
I was going to say something to do with timber.
Yeah, and the girls, they wanted to get out of high school and get married, and that was their sole ambition. They had,
a hell of a long range plan, Susan.
Yeah, if it was good enough for their parents, it was good enough for them, and it just drove her crazy.
As I can well imagine, even communities that have people doing that, and there's nothing wrong with following in your father and mother's footsteps. There's not. I don't think that's what you're saying or what I'm saying.
Their minds.
But communities also have people who go and do the education thing so that people can do that.
Yeah. These people's minds were completely closed. They did not want to learn at all.
By the way, you got fan mail. Sandra just wrote in and said, regarding the Hoover comment. Nice one, Susan.
So, I have a problem with Hoover. Hoover is just one of my...
Well, he was, as Tosh noted in his email earlier today, he was the father of the program under Harding, whereby surplus agricultural products were bought up and destroyed.
Yeah, rather than fed to the poor.
Right.
Yeah. And people have been saying for years, even believe it or not, even as somebody as much of a right-wing tool as Chris Matthews can be, he has been saying for years on the air, go out and round people up, young kids, pay them just a little bit over minimum wage, and send them out and start fixing infrastructure, doing road repair, straight out of Roosevelt.
Yeah, but you know what? You'd have to have somebody who respects. You would have to have someone who respects Roosevelt to make that happen. Susan, I got to run. We're getting them stacked up, but thanks for the update on Roseburg.
No problem. I am going to go back to Porcite.
All right. You take care.
Hey, what can I say? I'm a gamer, too.
I understand. We'll talk to you soon.
Takes my frustration out to kill monsters.
Oh, I understand. You know, we've been known to slaughter a few zombies around here ourselves.
Yeah, blood and gore everywhere. Okay, and give my love to everybody.
All right, bye now.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, it's really fun to see what happens to a zombie when you hit him with a chainsaw or maybe an axe handle or in some iterations of the game, you can beat him up with a Fender Stratocaster. Big fun. And I mention that only because we got an email in from Fancy Free. She says, my magic jack is giving me a symphony of static, so no calls today. However, the initial reports of the shooter in Norway said he was a World of Warcraft player as well. I know someone who's a WoW player, and apparently it has its fair share of addicted players and folks who've done the equivalent of losing the farm behind WoW addiction. Anybody heard anything about this? So if you have, chime in. I saw some World of Warcraft mention as well. Meanwhile, talking about NFL players and old NFL players that you never... Clayton wrote in and says, remember the refrigerator, the fridge? Perry? Yeah, his legs don't work anymore. Yeah, no kidding. Lottie, our moderator in the chat room, says, Bob, more on the Oslo killer. Interesting fact. The 1,518-page book that Anders Behring Breivik wrote has the cross of the Knights Templar on the cover page of the document with this caption, De lauda novae militae pauperis comilitones Christi templique Solomonici. My Latin is a bit rusty, but here's my take on the translation. In praise of the new knighthood of the Knights Templar, and I think you're pretty close, Lottie, in praise of the new knights, the poor soldiers with Jesus, with Christ, of the Temple of Solomon. The poor soldiers of Jesus Christ, of the Temple of Solomon were the official name of the Knights Templar. And Lottie simply asks, so they claim he's not a Christian? Yeah, they can claim all day long, but he is. Benedict at Large noting, here's Robert Reich agreeing with Mosler's, Warren Mosler's, in my conclusion, Reich is perhaps the most passionate pro-labor voice among liberal economists today. Why Washington is about to make the jobs crisis worse. Note, however, that's the article. Note, however, that Reich, like Krugman, argues from the Keynesian viewpoint, which falsely states that deficits are to be paid back over the business cycle, and so Reich is similarly unable to make the hard technical case against spending cuts. This is the fatal flaw of Keynesianism, one which Keynes deliberately and admittedly embedded in it, and the one which is used to great effect by neoliberalism in its arguments against Keynesian economics. William says, I haven't written in a while, but I have a question. When I hear the phrase shared sacrifice tossed about, I have to really wonder, what does this mean? Are we entering Betsy Wetsy riding a riptide? So shared sacrifice sort of depends, does it not? Here, one end of the spectrum, we have a homeless person sitting on a curbside tossed out on the couch who finds a quarter and has a few things in his or her pocket. Now they can buy a fast food burger. On the other side of this very wide and diverse spectrum, we have the billionaire with funds to go on for generations. Then there's the issue of those who bring up shared sacrifice. Many are to be found on either side in the power levels of our own government, and yet we never hear what their sacrifice amounts to. They are set for life, yet are very far from the people who have nothing, let alone anything they can possibly sacrifice, like the working class poor, another term tossed around. There are so many levels, yet the aim and focus is always on those who hang on, and those who have lost their grip, and those who have not a worry in the world. Who decides, and where is the fairness as we slip away through the looking glass, or follow Betsy Wetsy's unknown fate? Yeah, shared sacrifice doesn't ever do me any good either. Because every time I hear shared sacrifice, that means we do all the sacrificing and share what little we have left with the people who don't need any more. Right? Yeah. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob. How are you?
Hey, Tracy, what's up?
Not much. Just, you know, listening to you guys talking about the different things, the crazy white guy in Oslo, who they're still trying to say was a Muslim. I'm not understanding, you know, they're not saying he's a Christian, and all this. It's like he is spouting about the Knights of the Templar and saying that he reads Glenn Beck et al. And his ilk. So what does that mean then?
I'm thinking, no, dude's a Christian. Yeah, who are we trying to kid?
it never ceases to amaze me how, you know, it tickles me when they talk about the liberal media, because we don't really have a liberal media. Because if we had a liberal media, there would be more reports about the fact that this guy was a Christian. There would be more reports about what's going on in England with Rupert Murdoch. And there will be more reports about a whole lot of things, but that we'll never hear about unless we go and read The Guardian or other, or Think Progress or other newspapers that are not controlled by the corporate media.
Right. Just to go back for a minute, Tracy, to this issue of his Christianity, bad outcomes from not acknowledging his Christianity is the fact that nobody else in Christianity has to address the issue.
Exactly.
You know, we need for people, we need for Christian institutions that actually have some semblance of morality about them to say, this man embraced Christ. Because you know what? We damn sure demand it of the Muslim world, don't we? How many right-wingers have we heard say, well, you know, the problem with the Muslims is they don't do enough to condemn the terrorists. Even though every time some crazy-ass suicidal person in the Middle East blows themselves up, every Muslim organization from Maine to California says, this is not Islam, this is not the religion we follow, this is not... And they make profound, overt statements that, you know, this ain't us, please don't come kill us some more.
This is not us. This is not what the Quran is teaching. This is not what we are teaching in our mosque. That is not what we are teaching. This is a crazy fringe, you know, people who...
Perversion of the teachings of Muhammad. Right. But you know, you don't... Nobody's going to call on Dick Land down there at the Southern Baptist Convention. That's his real name, Dick Land. Nobody's going to call on him to disassociate himself from Breivik. Okay.
Now, it just reminds me, because, you know, I don't remember, because, like I said, I didn't become truly politically aware until the last couple of years. However, when Timothy McVeigh did the Oklahoma City bombings, and we know that he, you know, was trying to save, you know, America for Americans and all that, did anybody come out and do the same thing and say, you know what, this is not, as Christians, this is not who we are. This is not what we teach. was there crickets in the room when that happened?
Ain't nothing but crickets.
Okay. You know, it just, it troubles me because, you know, I am a Christian. And, you know, when people use Christ as a way to spew hate and hateful actions and violence and stuff like that, I don't know. I'm not a big avid Bible reader, Bob, but I promise you, the only act of violence that I remember Jesus doing was when they pissed him off so bad, and they were the money changers. And
yeah,
stuff.
And he ran the hedge fund managers out of the temple. I'm
the
sorry,
hedge
money
fund
changers
out of the temple. Oh, I'm sorry, the money changers, the money lenders. Or, I mean, the same that you know the what is it, the check cashing places and the
title loans,
the car title loans, and the payday advances. And the, you know, the bullshit mortgages that people got who, you know, I love, like, I think we said something about, well, those Negroes shouldn't have been trying to buy houses anyway. But the problem is it wasn't just the Negroes. There was a whole lot of people who had never bought a home before. They were renters and they believed saying, well, I don't know anything about buying a house, but I'm coming to these people, these mortgage brokers and these real estate agents, and it, you know, and I should believe them because why would they lie to me?
And then of course, and I think this is a very deliberate thing, Tracy. We took down, not we, not you, not me, but the right wing took down the one effective organization that was able to step in when those same people who had been preyed upon found out that their fat was, in the deep fryer. They're not just in the skillet. I mean, they're so, you know, you're soaking
like
in
I
it.
Say, how did
you know, acorn.
Okay.
Acorn.
Acorn. They took acorn out. And for no other reason but because why? They were doing their jobs and the Republicans didn't, okay, I'm sorry, the right-wingers did not like them. Because it was that one still lonely voice of the night for poor people.
Right. And, you know, just to back up for a minute, one of the reasons that I wish these mainstream churches like the Southern Baptist Convention, would deal with these issues, is because they've gotten so far away from the teachings of Jesus. They're all hung up on gay folk and so forth. I'm telling tales out of school.
And abortions.
Oh, yeah. And so, I promise.
They're in my uterus.
Right. Now, I probably don't have to do too much background work to explain that I live in a very, very small community in which social interaction happens primarily in church youth groups, if you're a kid.
Right.
Okay. So this past Saturday, my youngest, whom I love dearly, went off with a friend of hers to a youth rally.
Oh, no.
You know, and I'm not going to tell her no, she can't, but, you know, we're going to...
No, not that, but see, these things are important that she, you know, because you raised her right, and you're hoping that you raised her in such a way that she won't be, you know,
well,
brainwashed into thinking what they think.
And that's
so
the thing,
happened?
when she got home Saturday evening, I got a proud little confirmation of it, because she said, well, we were there at the youth rally, and the preacher, whoever he was, you know, because it's always some itinerant dude on the road who's out going, you know, church to church and hustling the congregation.
Yeah, like, what's his name? And what was that movie that Robert Mitchum was in, and he killed Shelley Winters?
Oh, yeah. I know exactly. No, I don't know. I can't come up with the title, but right.
But same thing, itinerant preachers that would go roaming around and screwing women and stuff like that.
Right. And this guy, my daughter said, Daddy, he spent all his time in the pulpit going on about how gay people are bad.
And that was it.
And she said, it was disgusting, Daddy.
And I told her,
right there, I said, honey, I need you to understand something. If you're ever in one of those situations again and you hear that kind of filth, even if you're riding with somebody else, you have a right to stand up and walk out on that hate monger. And you can wait in the parking lot or the ante room to the church or out by the water fountain until your ride comes out. But you do not have to sit and listen to that garbage.
Night of the Hunter. That was the movie.
Yes.
And that's just, I think, I don't know, but same thing happened to me, 2004 elections when, you know, people voted for George Bush because he was, you know, supposedly a Christian and, you know, pro-life and blah, blah, blah. So I was going to one of those multi-ethnic, multi-dimensional, multi-millionaire churches. And so one Sunday, the minister got up and basically, you know, and I know it was directed to the black members of the congregation because typically black people vote Democrat. And basically this, the pastor said that, you know, because he was giving examples of other black churches that were no longer going to vote Democrat because of the whole, you know, pro-choice, pro-life, you know, debate. And so he basically said, you know, if you don't, you need to think about the way you vote, because if you don't vote, you know, for this man who loves God and country and loves all the unborn little babies, you are not a good Christian. And, you know, that, so at, right at that moment, I stood up, gathered my Bible and my purse and walked the hell out and never went back. Because I'm like, I keep remembering the whole thing about Jesus being Christianity is a choice. It's about free will. And how dare you, I could choose whether or not to be a Christian. So if I could choose whether or not to be a Christian, why can't I choose what to do with my body? And how dare you tell me something like that from the pulpit? And fortunately for me, because I have my own brain and I don't drink Kool-Aid, except for the red flavor, but not Jim Jones Kool-Aid.
Right.
I couldn't believe what he said. I was like, really? Seriously? Like you said to your daughter, you don't have to say anything, but just, you know, just standing up and walking out sends a very strong message.
Yeah, but, you know,
standing up and walking out, people might think that you're just going to the restroom or something.
Well, but the other thing is, no, I mean, she's a teenager, and you know what that's all like. And,
I can
imagine that the next thing that would happen
imagine.
Is, if she did that,
know,
is,
because
if,
like you said, she's a teenager, and she has her friends, and, you know, but thank goodness she know, because of who you are as a parent and as a person, she realized that it was just, really? Are you, you know, where's it about the teachings? You know, I came here to hear a sermon. I didn't come here to hear you talk, you know, spew hate about gay people. With all the sins that are happening in the world, you know, if you really want to get down to it, God has no respect to person. A sin is a sin is a sin. And so, you know, if you consider homosexuality a sin, it's no different from you when you lie, when you like the Republicans are doing, lying about the debt ceiling, or when they're lying and, you know, when they lied to in 2010 and told people that they, you know, they were, get, if you elect us, we'll get you jobs.
Or when they, Tom Coburn, to go back to our previous conversation, accuses people of sucking off the programs.
Exactly. Now, these are the people that, you know, you get what you vote for, or in this case, what you don't vote for. And these people that are saying, well, you know, these Democrats that set their happy asses at home and didn't, because it's not like these people won in landslides. It was the fact that nobody came out and voted because they were pissed off at Obama. Hell, I'm not happy with Obama, but by God, I can't even imagine. I mean, thank God. I think California was the only state that we still have our, you know, Democratic elected officials. You know, we still have Pelosi and Loretta Sanchez and
Harry Waxman. Yeah.
And Waxman and Barbara Boxer and, you know, and Dianne Feinstein and all that. We still have, you know, and we're kicking, you know, we kicked ass in the California legislature also. Thank God. However,
well, you know,
California is only one state.
True, but I got to add one to that. It's sort of out there. It took, you know, you may have heard me talking about this law firm in Washington, D.C. that said that we have birth defects near mountaintop removal sites here in Appalachia because we're all inbred.
They're inbred. Yeah,
yeah, guess what? It took a California congressperson to call them out on the floor of the House for that.
Honorable person from California?
I wish I had it in front of me, but if you go to wvgazette.com and go to the coal tattoo blog, and scroll through the posts there, you'll eventually find her name. But yeah, because Ken Ward blogged about it. Yeah, it took a woman from California to stand up and object in righteous indignation for the blood libel being perpetrated against Appalachian people. Not Hal Rogers, not Nick Rahal, not Rockefeller, not Manchin, not Shelley Moore Capito, not David McKinley, not none of them. It was a woman from California.
That basically they're talking about your people that, you know, more than likely, you know, they're fine as long as they're voting for you, but then again, but they're still inbred, so they're probably ignorant anyway.
I best not touch that one because I'll...
Let's leave that one alone. So let's talk about how these people are scaring my little old lady customers.
Okay.
I everybody knows I drive a cab, and I have this lady that I pick up sometimes twice a week. Her name is Mary, and she is the most awesome woman in the world. She's probably in her 70s. She worked for Universal for almost 40 years. She's an Irish Catholic from Chicago. So, you know, Mary ain't no joke, right? And we would, you know, because every day, whenever I pick her up, we talk about two things, movie stars and politics, right? Because Irish Catholic from Chicago, so you know she's a Democrat, mm-hmm. right? You know, so she knows about Daley and all that, you know, the Daley family, whatnot, and so forth. But one of the things, she's like, you know, I haven't been, she's just sitting at home depressed. You know why she's depressed, Bob? Because she's worried that for the 40 years or so that she worked for Universal and the 10 years she worked for the government and whatnot and so forth, that come August the 3rd, she's not going to have any money. She's like, I don't have any money in the bank. She's like, thank God I bought my condo when I did because I don't have a house. I don't have a mortgage payment or anything like that. But I need my money. I need my Medicare. And these bastards are scaring little old ladies. And that offends me.
Well, that's a sin. I mean, I don't take the broad view of sin that the fundamentalists do and everything. I'm talking about when you do things that deliberately hurt other human beings.
That's a sin, damn it.
Yeah, there's your sin.
There's your sin. Because I'm thinking about the Beatitudes. You know, blessed are the poor blessed are the meek, blessed are this. Jesus was very, very, very in tune with the poor. He cared, you know, Jesus was about the downtrodden and the people who had nothing. He didn't hang out with the Sadducees and the Pharisees and the Sanhedrin council and taking the counsel of the ungodly like our president is. He cared about, Jesus was a liberal. And, you know, I know that some white ringer is listening to me saying, Jesus wasn't a liberal. He had guns and everything. He didn't want to be around the poor and now all that.
Yeah, take up your M16 and follow me.
Exactly. No, sweetie, no.
Oh, and by the way, I got to backtrack with you just real quick, Tracy. You mentioned Night of the Hunter, and the minute you said it, I went, oh, yeah. And you know, it's a story about a predatory preacher.
Exactly.
The author of the book upon which that film was based was a man named Davis Grubb. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Davis Grubb was a West Virginian.
Oh, really?
So, you know, it's a great thriller story. It's a wonderful piece of film noir. And it's also something that he learned firsthand about, because these predatory ministers do, because they're clothed in the cloth.
Exactly.
They are not to be questioned.
Not to be questioned. Exactly. It's like, because, like you said, just because they tout the Bible and Jesus, they're not to be questioned. And yes, they are to be questioned. And see, this is what I love about, you know, like I said, I'm not a Bible thumper by any, you know, but I know enough about the Bible to know that all these things that these people are talking about are not. Like I said, when you're using Jesus to spew hate and violence, then look at the freaking Crusades and all that.
Well, and look, you know, what this murderer in Norway was enamored of.
With these, you know, he killed kids.
Yeah, and by the way, you'll probably run around. Well, I don't know if you're in your cab right now or not, but you'll.
I'm actually at home with beer and head and Thai food too.
The Thai food.
Don't hate me.
Yeah, I'll try not to. Don't tell me it's got. I don't want to hear about the curry. I don't want to know about the tom yum gah.
Tom
Kha Gung. No. I just got this email in from Mark from Florida who says. Mike Huckstery blamed Islam and complained about liberal perspectives on the shooting and complained about the 5-0 response time and no guns on the island. If only they'd have done, and, you know, Scott from Sweden asked that question on Saturday. When are they going to do it? Well, there it is. There it is. Mike Huckstery. If only they'd had some guns on the island, praise Jesus, this wouldn't have happened.
Really? Seriously? Wow. See, it's just the sheer, you know, I may not agree with what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. But there has to be a limit to when you're espousing hate.
Let's see. Yeah, and then there's that guy who's sliding ever lower on the right wing talk ladder. Michael the Savage Wiener, you know, he's out of the Bay Area.
No, I never heard of him.
Yeah, well, lucky you. Michael the Savage Wiener, he hates immigrants. You know, they carry disease. They carry vermin, these vermin. You know, and he talks like this.
Really? And he's on the radio and he talks like that?
Oh, yeah, he does. He was a confidant of Allen Ginsberg at one point in time and sent him postcards telling him how he wanted to stick a camera up Allen's butt and look around a little bit.
Oh,
but he hates
really?
Gay folks. Yeah, he hates gay folks.
Hates gay folks, but he wants to give somebody a what is it? Because I have one.
Yeah, a proctoscope? Yeah, only this was this was a Nikon 35mm proctoscope.
Oh.
The Savage Wiener has now stepped up to the plate. You know, they can't. What's that old saying? You know, that dogs return to their own. You know, well, that's the way it is with right wingers. Let's see. The Savage Wiener has now said the official story makes no sense. This looks like a classic conspiracy. This has all the appearances of a cover up. They created their Reichstag fire. They found their Timothy McVeigh. They created their Jack Ruby. How could one man have blown up the downtown and then raced to the island to kill the teens? This is likely a fabrication of the Labour Party, who needs to hold on to power to enforce their multiculturalist, Muslim-favoring, anti-nationalist views, especially in light of the earlier credit for this atrocity claimed by the radical Muslim group whose leader they were threatening to deport. The official story defies logic in the following sense as well.
Oh my God.
If this lone right-winger hated Muslims as the New York Times is reporting, then why did he slaughter his own people and not Muslims?
Maybe because there weren't any Muslims hanging around in Norway?
Right. I hoped incidents like this will lead Europeans to come to the defense of their own civilizations and clamp down on the hate and intolerance that takes perverse advantage of European tolerance and openness.
Well, see, these are the same, you know. And,
run screaming.
And his name is Mike Savage.
Yeah, Michael. Yeah, Michael. His real name is Michael Wiener.
Oh.
But his,
okay,
yeah,
so
he's
means,
Michael
he,
Savage.
So he is who he says, so he is who he is.
Yeah, he's a Savage Wiener.
He's
a Savage Wiener.
He's a Savage Wiener, which is probably really a cocktail weenie, but ow. But he's the same, you know, when you talk, what clicked in my head about what you were saying about the openness of the Europeans. See, he's the same son of a bitch that, you know, during World War II, and when the black soldiers went to France and basically anywhere in Europe, and they were treated with respect. And so then, they, you know, the white folks couldn't have that. So they were going around telling the French women and so that they were monkeys and had tails. And whatnot and so forth, that they weren't human. Because they, we have to keep these men down. We can't give them a sense of dignity or self-worth or anything like that. when, you know, when for the first time in any of their lives, especially during World War One, that was probably the first time that they were treated with any modicum of respect by a white person. But we can't have that, can we?
No, that's dangerous.
That's dangerous because, oh my God, what if the Negroes start, you know, having self-worth and self-realization that they are human beings and that, and then you had the argument in every war that black men could not fight and that, you know, every war there had to be some kind of proclamation from the Revolutionary War to up until about Korean War, that they did not allow black troops to carry guns until the shit got sticky.
Right. Because never mind the fact that white folks seem to keep causing all the problems.
Right.
Yeah, right. And bear in mind, just ruminate for a moment, meditate for a moment, Tracy, on what this story out of Norway would have looked like if the guy had been brown skinned or of some sort of African descent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would the Fox News.
Oh shit! Barack Obama would be bombing some country in Africa by now.
Exactly.
You know, it's like Sandra mentioned the other night. You know, we got a black president who is now bombing Africa. That's a little wake-up moment.
Wake-up moment. And I was just a lady that I tweet with back and forth. And we were, have you ever heard of something cellular memory?
Cellular memory?
Mm-hmm.
I think I know what you're talking about, but there's
basically it's the premise, and I don't think this is the premise because I really feel that this is something that happens. Basically, cellular memory is something that happens that is ingrained in people of black people who descendants of slaves and whatnot have gone through, and they know this pain. They know the pain of being black. They know the pain of being slaves. They know this pain, even though I have never been a slave, but the brutality was so horrible and brutal that it's in your genes. It's in your cells, and it's something that you can remember even though it did not physically happen to you, but it's just something that's been passed down from, you know, generation to generation. And the lady said, I don't want to say her name without her permission, but you know what she said to me? Barack Obama has no cellular memory. His father was not a slave. His father was born in Kenya. And his mother was white. So how can he have that cellular memory of what it's like to be black? Not to say that he did not get treated horribly. Look how he's being treated now just because for no
reason. Well, and his daddy was treated like crap by the British Empire, of course.
Right, but it's still, crap is different from slavery, but he doesn't have what most American blacks have ever gone through. And so, you know, and it gave me a whole new perspective of, you know, like I said, not to discount what he went through when he was in college, and especially, you know, when he was in Indonesia and Hawaii and all that, probably the only little chocolate kid in the block. And I'm pretty sure those, you know, you probably got his ass kicked on a regular basis. But it's just you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and going and working backwards for just a minute, Tracy. Imagine for a second, just remember.
When the
Army major went sideways and shot people down at what was it, Fort Hood in Texas?
Oh God, yeah.
Well, the right wing is still having a hissy about that, Tracy.
Why?
The American, the liberal media is covering up the fact that this was a Muslim terrorist act. It wasn't just a random shooting. This was more Islamist terrorism.
Oh, Christ almighty.
Yeah, and I mean, and they're still worked about it. And yet at the same time, over here, you know, blonde hair, blue eyes, 6'3", you know, probably sunburns under the refrigerator light bulb, just like me.
Right.
No, the closest that Fox could get. You know, this looks like a case of domestic extremism.
Domestic extremism? Not terrorism like it was, extremism.
Right, right. You know, I mean, and I'm not making light of the situation, but I'm old enough to remember the early heyday of Saturday Night Live. You know, I remember the first cast, and then a little bit later, Eddie Murphy comes along.
Right.
And he does this sketch where, on the one hand, he goes in as a black man trying to get a loan at the bank, and, well, sir, I don't know. Oh, we're sorry, your credit score. And then they show him, you know, he's backstage and he's getting the white people makeup put on him and he walks in using that white person voice that he has.
Right.
Oh, you want some money? Well, no, I don't really want any money. Here, take some money. And just, you know, pointing out that double standard. It's the same thing.
Exactly. But, you know, as much as I could, you know, President Bush, but he was still the president of the United States, and I would have never disrespected the office because he was president of the United States, and it would be a force to respect that office, regardless of whether or not he's an idiot. Sorry. However, the way and Laura Bush and all that, the way these people, Barack Obama. And the viciousness of the way they talk about Obama, if anybody had said a quarter of the decency of what they put oh my God, it would be Secret Service would be knocking on their door.
Oh, yeah, the Secret Service would be, they would be knocking down their door because we saw that happen. In the early days of the first Bush term, a man was imprisoned for telling a joke about a burning bush in a bar.
And he went to jail.
You could call
President Barack Obama, and I like saying Barack Obama, because I think it makes my, when I say it, President Barack Obama, because it just makes people's heads explode. You know, but it's like, okay, I guess I'm, hold on a sec, I guess everybody's saying that my phone is breaking up, really?
Well, no, it's probably me. It's probably something happened with squirrely bandwidth here, and well, hopefully, but no, it's not you.
The bottom line is, the fact of the matter is that the double standard, the hypocrisy, and, you know, I know a whole bunch of people back in January 2009 thought this was going to be the ushering and the dawn of a new day, that, you know, all the pains were going to be healed, and, you know, that we were going to be one.
And lo, the former things are passed away, and that, yeah.
Yeah, and that we were going to be one big old happy multicultural family. No, unfortunately, it gave rise to these people have always been racist, but we pretty much have been kept in check.
There was a great hashtag on Twitter over the weekend called Before Black Presidents. And
I like that. Did you hear about the hashtag FU Washington?
Yeah, I did. I saw a little bit of that.
Yeah, that was fun. You know, I participated in that all over and over again.
But this was people tweeting what the world was like before there was a black president.
And the
one that came to my mind immediately, and I of course had to tweet it, was before black presidents, newspapers didn't publish editorial cartoons of the president of the United States as a shot dead ape on the sidewalk.
Yeah, and they didn't print pictures of the White House with watermelons on the front lawn.
Yeah.
You know, and thinking that was, oh, it's just a joke. No, it's not just a joke, because like one of the gentlemen in the chat room was saying that liberals is something. I forget how he said it was the new black, and I'm like, what, the new black? And I know he didn't mean anything by it, but I'm like, you, because I asked him, I said, are you white? He's like, yes. I said, then you'll never know what it's like to be black, because regardless of, you are a white man, and without you, if as long as you don't open your mouth and talk about your political views or anything like that, or your religious or your sexual orientation or anything like that, you will walk in anywhere and will be seen as a white man, regardless. But when I walk into a building, when I walk into a business or a store or what have you. And I don't have to even open my mouth, but the fact of the matter is nothing I could do about being black, nor would I want to change myself as is black. But, and when I put it to him that way, I said, because when you said it's the new black, what's wrong with the old black?
Yeah.
And when I put it to him that way, he's like, I said, because as much as you protest, as much as you go through, and not to discount anything that, you know, especially if you're a pacifist or anything, or protester or anything like that, because even back in the day when people, you know, when black people and white people protested together, white people got treated far differently than black people did. You know?
Absolutely and undeniably true. You know, William just writes in from Cleveland and reminds me of something. He says, post-Civil War, the 9th and 10th Cavalry regiments and the 24th and 25th Infantry regiments were reserved for black troops and non-coms, and they fought in Cuba in the Spanish-American War. And I'm reminded of something our buddy John up in New York sent along. I watched a trailer for a documentary, and this is out, I think, somewhere in New Mexico. And it was, one of those U.S. cavalry outposts, you know, out in the middle of the sand-blown desert, right? So who did we send there?
The color folks.
Uh-huh. The Buffalo Soldiers.
Buffalo Soldiers.
And,
you know.
And there was a cemetery there. And that cemetery had been plundered for grave goods.
We can't even, they can't even let us rest in
won't,
grave.
No. And so what was left of them was disinterred and reinterred in a secure and honorable place. But getting that done was a hero's labor of, you know, 10 years or more. And by the time they figured out who had done the plundering, it was, of course, an old white man.
Mm-hmm.
Dude had he up and died before he could be, you know, given a fair trial.
Well, it's like, you know, I don't know if you ever watch Law and Order, or any of the Law and Order.
Oh, yeah, dum-dum, yeah, sure.
You know, but did you ever see, there was an episode of Law and Order Criminal Intent where this black guy had killed a nun because he wanted information on somebody of these people that had beat his brother damn near to death, beat him so badly that he was a vegetable. And the bottom line, so when they confronted the man about what he did, the black man, he's like, oh, so now what is it about your justice system that, you know, after the bombings and the lynchings and the horrible things that was done in the 50s and the 60s, well, you know, just anytime, you know, especially during during the Civil Rights Movement, and now you're going after these old white men who have lived their lives. You know, now, you know, they're about to die anyway, so what difference does it make? Why didn't you go after them when they were actually
when it mattered.
On trial? Huh?
When it mattered.
When it mattered. When it mattered. And it's the thing about, can you do it when it matters? Can you tell me, you know, it's like one of those things, like, you know, when people tell me that I should get over, you know, why should you still care about slavery? It happened so long ago. Get over it. I don't hear too many people telling that to the Jews about the Holocaust, or those that believe that the Holocaust actually happened. I don't hear them saying that to the Japanese about the internment camps.
Well, no, and you know, yeah, the classic pasty-faced, doughy white response to, and they love to bring it up. It pops up on right wing, probably pops up on right wing hate radio at least once a week. You know, they want reparations for slavery.
Right.
Yeah, I never enslaved anyone. Oh.
But
you know, the thing is, you know, you talk about that cellular memory. There's a legitimacy to that.
There is a when
because
when
you
are relegating black people to a permanent underclass. When you have these people, the CIA with the Iran-Contra thing, you know, bringing drugs into my neighborhood and decimating my neighborhoods and killing my people and putting them in jail because you got your fucking war on drugs and your three strikes laws, but you're saying that I should get over it.
Right. But, you know, the funny thing is, and I don't want to incur anybody's wrath,
Incur.
Well, no, with the Holocaust.
With the yeah.
Nobody tells the relatives or survivors of the Holocaust to get over it.
They don't.
Nobody tells them to forget about it.
They have to get over it.
Yeah, and they have a motto, and it is an appropriate motto, and it should be never again and never forget.
Because we got these people like Glenn Beck, who, you know, he called those kids that got killed Hitler Youth.
Yeah. The led the program with it. I played the audio, and it, you know, damn near made me vomit.
And I'm like, and I retweeted that, and I said, who are you calling who the hell are you calling a Nazi? You looked in the mirror lately? You know, it's because, and see.
And you know what? I mean, this is another one of those moments. Our buddy Angelo, who is Stop Beck on Twitter. If you're not following him, you should. Did such a magnificent job deconstructing him and his advertising base, and had a big hand in the fact that his TV show went away. You know, this is another moment. That statement right there sounds like Hitler Youth. You know, I'm not sure who's advertising besides, you know, buy gold now on his program. But every last advertiser should be contacted.
And said, I'm not going to buy your shit.
And it's not just that. It's as long as you are associated with him as an advertiser, you're saying the same stuff he says. They need to understand that.
They understand money.
Right.
And like how it broke my heart about the Blue Bunny ice cream. I'm like, you bastards. You're ruining something else for me, damn it.
Now, I know, you know, there are little Blue Bunny freezers with their ice cream novelties in them at the convenience stores and something. Uh-uh, no more. Sorry, ain't going to happen.
Now, see, I might have to go postal if I find out that Haagen-Dazs is doing something stupid.
Well, they're evil, too. Go to Ben & Jerry's, and they're evil.
Okay.
But, you know, they're less evil.
Like,
You know what? I haven't heard anybody. I did this product mention the other night. They're out of L.A. They're called Helados Mexico. Helados. It is delicious. Little ice cream bars on a stick, strawberry, mango, butter pecan, coconut, all kinds of crazy flavors.
And the only problem about Helados Mexico, I mean, the thing is, they don't sell them everywhere, of course.
But, I mean, they sell quarts and pints and half gallons and stuff. And I mean,
but not at Ralph's.
Maybe not at Ralph's, but as I hate to say this, they sell them at Wally World. They're in Walmart.
They are?
Mm-hmm. If I'm getting Helados Mexico in Walmart in Fayetteville, West Virginia, yes, I have to go in there. I have to. There's just some things they carry that the other store doesn't.
Spell Helados for me, and I should know how to spell it.
Helados.
It's not ha.
Yeah, I guess it would be Helados, but yeah, Helados.
That's why I couldn't. That's why I'm like.
Yeah, you were using the J, weren't you?
Yeah, because you said Helados.
Yeah, see, that's because my Spanish is terrible.
But it's better, your Spanish is better than my Latin.
we haven't competed yet.
No, trust.
But the mango one, Tracy, the mango one is real good.
Here it is, Helados. This is what I love about the Internet, because, see, now I can, Helados Mexico, Walmart.com, mother.
Yeah, I don't like going in there either, and there's a lot of stuff.
I will have to go because I've had it, but I've had it in, you know, when I've been, you know, the little ice cream. Oh, well, you guys don't have that, but out here, especially like at the parks and whatnot, they have the ice cream vendors with the little, like back in the day, like the Good Humor guy that walked around with the little bell and they had the little cart with the ice cream. That's how I got them. They don't, like I said, I've never bought them at the store. I just bought them from the vendors, the street vendors, you know, selling them like they did back in the day with the Good Humor guy. And I am old enough to remember Good Humor truck.
Oh, I remember them well.
You know, but like you said, Helados Mexico, like you said, it's just so good. So what I'm going to have to do, well, I'm not going to do it tomorrow because I have
it was crazy. You know, I'll try just about anything once. You know, when I go by and I see in the freezer case, I see cucumber chili pepper popsicles, I'm going to buy one box.
You got to buy one box.
No, they didn't go down real well. They weren't a big hit in the family, but
they were.
They've got a Jamaican one that's flavored with hibiscus flowers. You know, jump back.
See, you know, and the horchata and the jamaica and, you know, and it's like, oh, being from Los Angeles and growing up, when I was a little girl, I spent some time in South Central, but this is back when South Central, you know, was middle class. And then we moved to West LA, and that was my other taste. I was 6-7 years old and got my second taste of racism without even realizing it, because as soon as we moved in, the for sale signs went up, and that was the beginning
like dandelions after a rain.
Yeah, and that was the beginning of white flight from some parts of the west side to the valley. But it, you know, but our neighbors.
But you're in the valley now. You're chasing them down, aren't you, Tracy?
Yeah, it's like, you know, I could be so evil. You know back when we had those really horrible wildfires in the desert,
right,
and stuff like that, I got way out. And I'm like, okay, this is awful. And I, you know, but if white folks stopped running away from Negroes and Hispanic people, maybe they wouldn't have to worry about their houses catching on fire and being caught in death storms. I know I'm awful.
No, it's like a conversation. Well, you know, the conversation Friday night. You know, I love, you know, Arizona's a beautiful place, but it was not designed to support millions upon millions upon millions of human beings.
No, nature is not happy, you know, and like for those people that don't believe in the science of, you know, global warming and overpopulation. Well, we won't say global warming. We'll just say climate change.
I say climate catastrophe, if that's...
Climate catastrophe, because, you know, when they talk about when we've had these horrible snowstorms, and, you know, basically in some states there's only two, summer and winter, you know, mm-hmm. And they said, well, there's such a thing as global warming. Why is there so much snow? It's not warm. How is that warm? So let's just change it to, like you said, climate catastrophe. And it's like, these systems are not made to maintain all these human beings. They are not.
And all the stuff that the human beings are putting into
them. And all the stuff that the human beings bring in. And it's all about, you know, they blinded me with science. It's, you know, but according to the white ringers, they blinded me with stupidity. Because it's like those shows, it's this blind allegiance, like, you know, these fools that have been signed away their lives to Grover Norquist. To say that we're not going to, you know, who the hell is he? But it's that same blind allegiance. You know, one of my favorite things to do is watch when white people go crazy on shows like Snapped and Who the Bleep Did I Marry? And these stupid women, you know, I'm glad that Who the Bleep Did I Marry is only a half an hour show, because I couldn't stand it otherwise. It's just long enough for me to say, God, you're a stupid bitch.
Well, you know, a lot of us get that just by watching Jerry Springer.
Yeah, true. But when the blind allegiance, you know, is, you know, these women, I mean, mounds and mounds of evidence. There was this chick who said, you know, her husband was a cop and he was raping people. Now, the evidence was that he was stalking the women that he raped. He had, they checked in his vehicle, because I guess there's a way that he was running their license plate numbers to get their addresses so he can follow them home, and, you know, and all this. And they had all this evidence. And she's like, well, they didn't have any DNA.
Oh, by the way, you just got an email from our buddy Andy.
Oh, is it a good email?
Well, yeah, it's gentle. It's gentle.
Uh-oh.
He says, would you please explain to Tracy that George W. Bush stole the presidential elections twice. He tortured, used illegal means to pass legislation, in particularly unpaid Medicare donut hole and unpaid drug costs, totally proved incapable of thwarting the 9/11 Reichstag fire event or investigating it, and made up a false pretext for war, among other treasonous and or illegal civil rights and unconstitutional took away First and Fourth Amendments behavior.
And yes, he did, but I did not disrespect
him. And he says, George W. Bush never earned our respect. He deserved our indignation and criticism. Mr. Obama deserves the same criticism and indignation when he gives away the gains of working people, and particularly the gains of the New Deal. We expected him to rebuild Roosevelt's New Deal, not to continue tearing it down, leaving off, picking up where Bush left off. Thanks,
and
Andy.
And my point exactly. The point is that with all this derision and all this, these horrible and evil, that Bush deserved some of the most horrible and hateful things ever said, half the stuff that has been said about President Obama. But the, my point being is nobody did it, not to this level. And bottom line is, you know, and I know all that shit about Bush. Trust and believe. Trust and believe. Like I said, don't call it trickle-down economics and say that it's raining. You know, I know what he did. My point being is that he was a bastard, and that's why he has slithered off. Him and his homeboy Cheney, you don't hear about them anymore, except for when Cheney tried to say that, you know, that when they killed Osama bin Laden, that was a Bush victory because of all the work that George Bush did to find bin Laden. Yeah, right. So, yes. No, but my point is that why, you know, with all the shit that he did and the horrible things that he did, 9/11, everything, the two, you know, invading Iraq and all of that, why didn't he get the same ire in the press? Why wasn't there, you know, horrible, you know, political cartoons in the Wall Street Journal and the Post and the Times and whatnot and so forth? And I'm just asking why.
Yeah.
Oh, I know why. Because he's a white guy. And the fact of the matter is, I don't care, you know, they're like, well, you're black, so you're just, you know, you're just being overly sensitive about it. I'm like, yeah, I'm black, but I'm a freaking human being first and foremost. And nobody deserves that disrespect. So if you're not going to disrespect the man that deserves that disrespect, don't disrespect this man just because he's a brother. That's
it actually makes sense. By the way, you just got email in from Vermont expat Mark, who says, listening every day from Okayama, Japan. He says, interesting conversation. My stepmother once told me that thousands and thousands of kids have been left by fathers of divorced parents, and they're all fine. She told me to get over it. I will never get over the loss of my father. Telling anyone who suffers from any loss, loss of freedoms, loss of loved ones, loss of physical and mental health, to simply get over it is coldly insensitive and shows a total lack of empathy. And he says, by the way, I was listening to the Tuesday, I think, rebroadcast where you said that you thought once the masses become homeless and start to rise up, the powers that be can kill them. Sadly plausible, but I beg to differ. The dead are of no value to the rich, but putting them in privatized prisons, however, can be a source of tremendous wealth and income to the heartless bastards.
Well, and that's what they're working on now. They are, you know, with the privatizations, you know, because if you privatize the prisons, then it becomes a for-profit model, and you're gonna have to start having laws that put more people in jail. You know, like if we do not vote these crazy, and I'm gonna say it, and
that's all right,
these crazy motherfuckers out of office, because they're crazy as I am black, and then
toaster.
if we're gonna have privatized prisons, when they're going to be throwing all these people who have lost their homes because for no other reason other than the fact that their job was, like I said, outsourced or downsized or what have you, then we're going to have a bunch of debtors. We're going to have people being thrown in jail because they're in debt. I wish we could throw Congress in jail for us being in debt. Okay.
Well,
Congress, I'm like, okay, so if our Social Security checks and all, you know, and the veterans checks and all these checks do not go out, does Congress get paid?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So why is it that they could get paid, but I can't? It's my tax dollars, damn it.
Because they're better than us. Don't you understand yet, Tracy?
It's the same principle, how they're screaming and hollering about the pensions and the firemen and for the firemen and the cops and the teachers, but don't they get a pension when they leave office?
Mm-hmm.
Don't they get health care? Now, last time I checked, you know, I didn't vote any of these fools in office that are talking about, you know, taking away my rights. However, I've never been in a, you know, I've been a supervisor here and there and stuff like that. And usually by the time you reach the level of supervisor or boss or what have you, your benefits, your pay and whatnot and so forth are usually better than your employees, yes?
True.
How in the world are my benefits or non-existent, and the people that I have that are supposed to be working for me, that are supposed to be my elected official, do they have better benefits than I do? If I even have benefits, or if I even still have.
Well, because it goes back to that George Carlin stuff that Sandra was talking about. They're in the club and you're not, and we're not.
And we're not. And I will never be in the club at the rate that they're going. You know, it's one of those things. I get teased because, you know, I'm very vocal. I don't know if you've noticed that. And
it's tough to get you going, Tracy. I got to tell you.
I know. But the thing is, I have, even when I was younger, I used to be told that I should run for office. And I'm like, at one point, I have even, you know, back in the day where you can go out into the neighborhoods and raise money and stuff like that, that true grassroots thing, and run for office because it didn't cost millions upon millions of dollars in order to run for office. But what average American who really wants to do something for this country, who is truly a progressive, who really wants the New Deal things to not only go on but get better, who really wants to see our infrastructure rebuilt? Because you look at what's happening in China, and they're building their infrastructure in such a way that they don't even have to worry about relying on fossil fuels. You know, they're building electric cars and all these other things. But we're still stuck, you know, on the tit of OPEC. And you got to wonder, it's like, do you...
Oh, I know. It's like the story I mentioned, you know, the little town in southern West Virginia is putting up solar panels, and so you got the thugs of coal saying, well, look at that government welfare going out there. There's my money they're giving away. Ain't going to do no good anyway, because that solar don't work.
That, you know, but how is it that in Germany, a country that has nowhere near as much sun as we have in California, they seem to be doing okay with solar panels?
Or as I have in West Virginia. Yeah. I know. It's
in Virginia, for God's sake.
Yeah, it's about deployment, and it's about economies of scale. Economies of scale apply to the number of rooftop solar installations, too. And, you know, the more electric meters you have going backwards, the more you have going on to the grid.
Exactly.
Bingo. Hey, Tracy, it's been a load of fun.
As usual, I was, you know, because I was...
I hope your Thai food's not cold by now.
The what, baby?
I hope your Thai's not cold by now.
Oh, no, I was eating that while I was listening.
Oh, rub it in.
And my beer had my Sam Adams.
Oh.
Summer ale.
Yeah. Oh. Well, it ain't far from 9 o'clock. It's coming up on, it ain't Miller time, but it's some kind of time.
It's some kind, as I always say, you know, God bless you and keep you. You know, keep doing what you do. And like I said, whenever you bring your happy ass out here to California, to Los Angeles, the first shrimp taco is on me.
I'm so there. And by the yeah, not just my happy ass, my Nordic nose. I'm watching the chat room. And I done found out all about my Nordic nose.
I kind of glanced in the chat room about the Nordic nose. I'm like, oh, see. Once we start on the subject, isn't it funny how the tangent?
Oh, it runs all over. That's the beauty of the chat room. Tracy, have a wonderful night.
You too, my dear, and I will talk to you soon.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
Yep, Tim from L.A. still in the chat room. That's my room! Let's see if we can get a couple more calls in. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Bob. This is Carl calling from Orlando.
Hey, Carl.
Look,
you got you some of them French fried potatoes?
We got right-wing Christians now so bad they've gone overseas shooting people.
About the size of it. What's going on, man?
Hey, Bob. I called a right-wing talk show and hit him with that today.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah. These guys are terrible. They're a Clear Channel spinoff, but right here in Central Florida. You can catch their signal from Lake City, Bob, practically the border of Florida, Georgia, all the way to Orlando. Huge. They're put here intentionally. Right-wing, just terrible. They're just terrible. They've been here for about 8 years. And I don't even call their show hardly, but I had to hit them today, and they got right-wing Christians going over there. You know, he didn't know. I hit him. He didn't know what to do. I think you and I could make him cry, really.
It'd be fun to try, wouldn't it?
Well, I know you could handle him, but
I'll have to stick you on the right-wing idiot up here sometime. You can get him on the interweb tubes in the morning.
We'll do the switcheroo.
Yeah, I'll send you the link. I don't want to give him any traffic or anything, but
exactly. Jim
has given him a merry chase for years on end.
Sure. I call up. I've been actually banned from the AM local talk station here, and because I just used the word BS in perspective. I didn't call anybody any names or anything. And the next week they had some right wing Christian guy on there, you know, using all kinds of cuss words. I thought, well, he didn't get banned, but and that's fine. They can't handle the truth, and that's very dangerous. And it ends up when you combine all those elements. But Bob, I just called to say I'm glad you're back and glad you're safe. And I stopped at Barnes and Noble's, and the Progressive has got an article about Blair Mountain. It's got some information and photographs there.
Awesome.
Tonight I stopped. But any case, I just wanted to hear your voice and let you know how much the community does need
you. Well, Mark, I appreciate it, and I appreciate the help, too.
Well, no problem. And, Bob, I'll keep listening. I listen to you every night.
Bless your heart. Thank you, Mark. Tell Carl we said hi.
I'll go look for Taters next.
All right. Bye.
Bye, Bob.
See you, Mark. I call it a banana blade. Some people call it a sling blade. I call it a banana blade. God bless Billy Bob Thornton. Crazier than Sprague Roach, but what a character he created. Let's see. One more. Oh, nope. Guess not. Which leaves me a little bit of room here before we close up shop for tonight. For those of you who are in the chat room, you'll notice that the chat room is not up to snuff. The chat room is not up to snuff because we owe $125 on that. And that's the one bill we have not yet paid. And we need to round up enough dinero, l'argent, if you will, money, to pay the chat room bill. It's $125, I'm informed, by John Fox. And that'll get that monkey off our back for a year or so. So if you can help out, it sure would be nice. Because the chat room, it's there, but the functionalities and the emoticons aren't, and all the fun little functionalities, they're not there. So we do need to pay for that, and that's $125. We got a little help. We got some, not a little help, a lot of help. We got a lot of help. Got some help from Mark earlier. In the grand scheme of things, we are still in a deep, deep, deep hole. Created by June and July. Everything we did was well worth it, but in the absence of me being here saying, you know, we need help, a lot of folks don't tend to remember. So, you know, we're talking about the thrifty 250, you know, just $10. And that works out to something less than 5 cents an hour when you consider what goes into the program. That ain't, you know, that ain't a lot we're asking. $10, you know, God, 60, 70, 80 people, $10. Sure would help. It would help a lot. And thanks to those of you who have and who do. A quick closeout on Norway coming from our buddy John in New York. If I can find it, there it is. John wrote this a couple of days ago. He said, Bob, so at press time last night, it still wasn't clear who this guy in Norway really was. I get up this morning and read, right-wing fundamentalist Christian. I apologize in advance if this gets too ranty. One of the things that sickens me amid a story that's sickening on every level is that I know we'll be force-fed, and these are, you know, these are written, this was written before it all started, and like Scott and like Michael, it comes true, because we know what these people are like. Amid a story that's sickening on every level is that I know we'll be force-fed so many apologies for religion in the next few days. You know, well, this isn't what Christianity's all about, says John. Bullshit. The entire fraudulent enterprise is a grotesque death cult, a pyramid of lies that glorifies death and demeans life. Just like fascism and corporatism and capitalism, which is why it's been so historically easy to overlay those things on top of Christianity. There was a short time 2 millennia ago when the church had a chance to focus itself on the life and sayings and transcendent mystical aspects of Jesus' life, but they decided to focus on his death instead. So we get these disgusting ideas of sin and judgment and the better world in heaven, which means death is deserved by some and not a tragedy, and the world as it is not worth protecting or improving. The problem with mainstream Christianity churches is that it gives cover to the real crazies. Imagine if there were times and places where murder was socially acceptable. On Sunday mornings in the churches, for instance, when it's done by a special class of people. You know there are cases where this has happened in history. Wouldn't it then be much harder to prosecute people for actual murder? Wouldn't we get ours going on the media and saying, well, that murder was wrong, but ours is okay? The same thing happens when Christians defend their death cult. No, they say, that man with the exact same core beliefs as us was crazy. But we're totally fine. So long as Christianity or any fundamentalist religion is socially acceptable, we'll be cursed with more instances of religious-based mayhem, and nobody will be allowed to bring up the root of the problems, which is not insanity, but Christianity. And John finishes off noting the callers to the program. And he said, so much of the left media looks like a big old white garden party. The Horn brings in an amazing variety of people of different classes, ages, races, etc. You've really built something that mirrors liberal America.